Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Oh, indeed we are, Dan.
Yeah.
Dan?
Yeah, Jordan.
When was the last time you saw somebody do something truly astonishingly excellent?
I saw that gymnastics routine, that floor routine that was going around on Twitter. I don't remember the young lady's name, but that was outstandingly good.
Was she the one that was like 13 years old?
No,
that's the ice skating lady.
Yeah, I think she's in college. I think she goes to UCLA. I wish I knew more details about this. I'm not a big gymnastics guy, but it came up in my Twitter feed. I watched it. I was like, holy shit. It's insane that people's bodies can do that.
Yeah.
And then I guess, I mean, we're recording this on Sunday, but last night I watched NXT TakeOver Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And like watching Ricochet, the pro wrestler Ricochet.
Is Phoenix okay?
Phoenix is all right.
Okay.
They've been taken over, but they are all right.
They
survived.
All right.
There's a wrestler named Ricochet who can just do amazing flips.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he could jump over stuff. The way he's able to land things that, like, you shouldn't be able to, your body shouldn't move like that.
Yeah.
Watching him is also really physically impressive.
Nice.
But look, dude, I want to answer this question more, but we don't have time.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Today's a big show.
Okay.
We got a lot to go over, and everyone should know that this is a podcast running a lot about Alex Jones.
And I only know what you tell me about Alex Jones. We're all going to talk very, very fast.
We have big news to take care of, and of course, everyone knows what that is already, and that is that I started playing Hyrule Warriors on the Switch.
Yeah. You did.
Big
how is
news.
It going?
Everyone has been waiting for us to talk.
Right.
That's not it at all.
Okay.
Roger Stone got arrested on Friday. He got indicted, and people are clamoring for our take on it. And so we will get to that, and I'm excited to. But before we get to that, we need to give a shout out to a couple people who make this show possible.
Nice.
People who have joined up and are now policy wonks. First, I'd like to say thank you to Kerry. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Kerry.
Hi, Kerry.
Next, Nikita. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, La Femme Nikita.
I'm sure they get that a lot. You probably don't appreciate our hacky humor.
Nope.
Next.
Terrible.
I'd like to say thank you to Brent. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Brent.
Thank you very much, Brent.
And then finally, I'd like to say thank you to Fred Koch's racist ghost. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Fred Koch's racist ghost.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm thankful.
Hey, if he maybe wants to make good, you know?
Oh, that's true.
You know, maybe it's one of those, trying to get to the good.
This could be a Christmas Carol kind of
exactly,
situation.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's Marley.
Like that. So he gives a couple bucks our way, and we appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
If you are a founding member of the John Birch Society's Ghost, or just anybody else, and you'd like to support our show, you can do that by going to...
That's a very narrow group.
Well, not the everybody else part. You can do that by going to our website, knowledgefight.com, clicking that button, says support the show. We would appreciate it.
Please do.
Now, Jordan, today, like I said, Roger Stone is, he got indicted, and he's in trouble. And here's the problem with being Roger Stone. His primary brand is basically being a dick, so no one's really going to go soft on him. And at the same time, two of the things that he's most famous for are the movie Get Me Roger Stone and saying that John Podesta's time in the barrel is coming prior to the John Podesta emails being leaked. So those two things are things that are so fucking easy for people to make jokes and headlines about. It's just a sea of people doing like, Mueller said, get me Roger Stone.
Oh,
or
no.
Even John Podesta said, it's now Roger Stone's time in the barrel.
Oh, man, that's like us saying La Femme Nikita. That's terrible.
It is hacky on a level.
Yeah.
But in a way, Roger brought it on himself by having this kind of brand and this career that's so attacky.
Tacky. Yep.
He ends up becoming the recipient of it once the tables are turned a little bit. And on one level, I wish people would be a little more creative, but on another level, I kind of enjoy it. I appreciate
me too.
It. Yeah.
He has to just be thinking like, why is everybody being so mean to me? Because he's a complete and total psychopath.
I think I'm a nice guy.
Yeah.
I'm just a dude trying to get by, man.
Right. Yeah. It's like, you know what? You can't even make a 40-year career out of fucking people over without eventually having to deal with karma. That's bullshit.
It's nonsense in a globalist plot for sure.
For sure.
So, I don't know how basic to get with this information, but I guess I should probably just assume that everybody doesn't know anything. Today we're going to be going over Friday's episode of Alex Jones's show. What would that have been? The 25th, I guess? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the January 25th, 2019. And it's in the immediate aftermath of Roger getting arrested and posting bail. He got arrested at, like 6 a.m, I believe was the exact time. FBI agents swatted his house, which I think is a good idea. I think that based on the things that he's up to and, you know, the context that he has, I would consider him a flight risk for sure. You're going to want to surprise him.
Yeah.
That's what I would, not because of danger, not like he's going to get a shootout going or something like that, but I wouldn't take any chances. So they SWAT teamed his house in the morning, took him away and, arrested him. Pretty soon after that, him and his lawyers were able to negotiate bail, and he posted a $250,000 bond, and he is now free to go to New York and Florida. I believe those are the two places he's allowed to travel between.
New York, D.C., and Florida, I believe.
That's correct, yes. But Austin, not on the list. He could have got Austin on that list, and he didn't, and I think that tells you something.
Do you think he could have gotten Austin on that list?
Yeah, absolutely. He works for fucking InfoWars.
Too close to the border.
Nah, that's for work. I mean, if you make that argument, then D.C. or New York should be too close to Canada.
I think Florida's too close to Cuba.
Sure. Any of these arguments could hold water. If Roger Stone wanted to, he could have gotten Austin on that list. He didn't, and I think that's partially because I have a large theory about all this, and I think that Roger... in many ways, now that he's actually been indicted, realizes Alex can't really help him outside of tricking his listeners into giving him money.
Right.
That's the only thing Alex can help him with. His problems are much bigger than Alex can help with now.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not a priority for him. I don't think it.
Yeah, I mean.
I think that it's just like he's going to use the InfoWars army or whatever for whatever they're worth, but he's not going to be like, he's not going to be Roger Stone anymore.
No.
So
he's not going into work at InfoWars and being like, and here's why I'm not, because he's just going to get really boring really fast. Yeah. And nobody gives a shit about his take on other shit.
And he'll direct his attention on places where like Trump actually is listening to, like Tucker Carlson and maybe going on Fox and Friends. Like he'll do that instead of helping Alex rile up the troops for their imaginary apocalyptic battle that's never coming.
I assume he goes out every night into the forest as well and screams,
there is a great moment in the in his press conference that he gave. We're not going to play a clip of it, but an interviewer asks, "Have you had any conversations with Trump about being pardoned?" And Roger's response is, "Pardon me." I don't think he was trying to be funny, but it's hilarious.
That's pretty great.
Yeah,
yeah.
So Jordan, here we go. Let's jump into this, we'll get through it the best we can. We're going to be going over this indictment here bit by bit as we go through the episode, but I'd like to lay some of it out for the listeners here who haven't read it. For someone like me, it seems unthinkable that someone wouldn't immediately go out and read that indictment, but I also accept that I'm a weirdo. So Mueller handed down a 6-count indictment against Roger Stone on Friday. Counts 2 through 6 are all lies that Roger told the House Intelligence Committee, and count 1 is an obstruction charge regarding some threatening messages that Roger sent to Randy Credico, his supposed intermediary with Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. Reading over this indictment, one gets a very strong sense that Roger is completely fucked. The obstruction charge could carry a 20-year sentence, and each charge of lying to Congress could be up to 5 years. But I don't mean that Roger's fucked because that's a total of 50 years he could be looking at, which is life for him. I mean he's fucked because of the information that's laid out in the document, and more importantly, the information that is conspicuous in its absence. The text messages and emails that are referenced are mostly, but not all, correspondences that had already come to light in some manner or another. Some are messages that came out when Jerome Corsi got in trouble like a month or two ago, about a month ago. Some were reported on back in mid-2018 when Randy Credico met with investigators. But there are a few pieces of information in the indictment that bring it all together and clearly demonstrate that Roger Stone intentionally misled the House Intel Committee and gives a strong indication as to why. There's no fat in that document, which I think is an interesting point. Mueller clearly has so many more emails and texts than the ones referenced in this document. And if I were a gambling man, I would bet that the reason that the indictment looks the way it does is because what is in there is enough for Roger Stone to be charged with a crime. And some of the other correspondences may contain information related to other crimes, particularly the correspondences between Roger and Jerome Corsi. I could be wrong, but that's my hunch. Either way, Roger is fucked because this indictment lays out a really open and shut case that Roger is super guilty of the crimes he's accused of. Another way he's fucked is that he's essentially been thrust into a prisoner's dilemma with Paul Manafort. The two of them know a lot of dirt on each other and are both really bad people. So now that they've both been indicted, each of them knows that the other is a threat. Typically, you never want to be in a prisoner's dilemma with someone who you know is untrustworthy, and there are few people...
Which one?
There are few people in town who are less trustworthy than Paul Manafort and Roger Stone. So that's sort of just a broad glimpse
right.
of what's going on. And now, in order to discuss this indictment within its proper context, I need to give you and the listeners a little backstory to flesh out some of the aspects and other some of these aspects of the story that other non-InfoWars focused outlets might have missed. So, Alex Jones isn't the only person in our story who has a radio show, or more accurately, had a radio show. On August 15th, 2016, Genesis Communications Network distributed a press release heralding the launch of The Stone Cold Truth, a 2-hour show hosted by Roger Stone every Saturday. The show was short-lived on GCN, which isn't suspicious at all. I say slightly facetiously. Ironically, his time slot is now filled by World Crisis Radio, hosted by Webster Tarpley, the former InfoWars guest who turned on Alex in early 2016 when he realized that Trump was an aspiring fascist. Very bizarrely, the co-host of Roger Stone's show, The Stone Cold Truth, is a comedian named Travis Irvine, who I have definitely hung out with multiple times. I've done shows with Travis, I've booked him on my shows when he visited town, and at no point could I have possibly imagined that he would end up being the co-host of a Roger Stone radio show.
Yeah, I know Travis.
Point is, this world is very weird.
This is weird.
Yeah, I know that he was a libertarian dude and he ran for mayor of his town. I knew that, but I couldn't have imagined he was this far. Like, the idea of teaming up with Roger Stone for a radio show is pretty crazy.
Now, hold on. If somebody gave me that offer, I would really have to think about it hard because that's fucking hilarious.
It is pretty wild.
Every day I would wake up and be like, I'm working with Roger Stone on a fucking radio? This is stupid.
Right. Yeah. So I agree with you, but also you got to consider the idea that you might end up complicit in something you don't realize you're getting involved in.
Yeah.
You might, anytime you agree to a project with Roger Stone, you know it comes with the possibility of a subpoena.
Yeah.
So you gotta weigh that in your calculus. So either way, I don't know. I've listened to a number of his episodes of his show, and I know that Travis is involved with Roger Stone, but in terms of the show, it really seems like Roger just has him there to use as sort of a millennial stooge kind of thing. I don't know. I don't want to assume what their relationship actually is or anything like that, but it's really fucked up. I think he's a really nice guy in the times that I've met him.
That's weird.
Yeah, very weird. So anyway, Roger released his first episode on August 20th and featured an interview with Jesse Ventura. I've listened to a bunch of episodes of the show, and the way I'd describe it is the Alex Jones show with no yelling and way more concentration. Wall-to-wall Trump campaigning and a little bit of Clinton bashing thrown in for good measure.
Travis, how have you been?
Look, I mean, Jesse's fine, whatever. But, like, the show itself is trying to take Alex Jones and make him NPR.
Yeah.
That's the kind of, and a little bit more, like, irresponsible with their reporting.
Right.
Certainly.
Oh, well, yeah, of course.
On his third episode, from September 3rd, 2016, Roger had an interview with Randy Credico. The interview itself is inconsequential, and the two pretty much just talk about how Roger and Randy supported some crime sentencing reform measures way back, so Roger is definitely not a racist. That's sort of the point they're trying to make. The only thing that really stands out to me is how Roger introduces Randy Credico on this episode.
And now, in an incredible metaphysical act, backed from the dead, a man who I actually only a few years ago swore I would never speak to again as long as I lived, and actually had a mass card printed out announcing his death, which I promulgated widely, Randy Credico. But Randy is a famed comedian.
So
that's a fucking intro.
That's quite an intro.
That is an intro. I want that intro in my life sometime. Sure. Sooner or later,
have a falling out and then get back together as friends, yeah. I'll give you that intro.
Okay, thank you.
So without context, that sounds a little bit strange. Why did Roger swear he would never speak to Randy Credico again? This is a piece of the story that almost every single report that I've seen fails to discuss. this is important. This is a very big piece of the story. And every article that I've read has basically just said, Randy Credico and, Roger Stone had a falling out, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
They just, no one has pulled that thread, or at least no one seems to. I'm sure somebody has, and I just haven't seen that article.
Yeah.
But the vast majority of these articles leave that question open, and I am the type of person who's very curious, and I want to understand why. Why the fuck do these two people who are deeply involved in a he said situation about espionage?
Yeah.
Why the fuck did they have a falling out? It seems important. So, it all goes back to 2007, and I would imagine that Randy was actually the one who didn't want to talk to Roger ever again. Back in 2007, Roger was working for the then New York State Senate Majority Leader Joseph Bruno, who is probably most memorable for being a huge enemy of then Governor Eliot Spitzer. Some of this stemmed from political differences, but some of it also probably was a result of Bruno being suspected of corruption, and the fact that Spitzer's office had ordered the state police to track his travel records in terms of expenses and flights and that sort of thing. Ultimately, this was a misuse of state resources, and Bruno was cleared of wrongdoing in terms of his travel history. But in 2009, he was convicted on two counts of what's known as, quote, honest services fraud, where he failed to disclose conflicts of interest involving him receiving $440,000 in consulting fees from a businessman he was friends with, which were alleged to be bribes and kickbacks. He was sentenced to 2 years in prison, but his legal problems were solved by a deus ex machina moment when the Supreme Court ruled in 2010 that honest services fraud statute, the statute regarding it, was too vague, and thus his convictions were overturned and he walked free. Legally speaking, Bruno is clean, but I refuse to accept that $440,000 from a friend who's a businessman is for legitimate consulting.
Yeah, I would have advised him to wait until right around 2016 when that would be like, hey,
let her rip.
You're doing great.
Let her rip.
Yeah.
Either way, Roger worked for Joseph Bruno at the time, raking in a salary of $20,000 a month. And Eliot Spitzer was breathing down his boss's
neck. What?
Yeah.
And, motherfuckers!
Fucking New York state politics, man.
Motherfuckers!
It is a racket.
State politics? He's just working for, oh God, I want to kill these people.
Yep. So Eliot Spitzer was breathing down Bruno's neck. And so Roger Stone went to work trying and succeeding in taking down Eliot Spitzer. First, he sent the FBI a letter on November 19th, 2007, tipping them off about Spitzer's habit of employing sex workers. This, to me, seems like a flagrant act of hypocrisy, seeing as Roger Stone is a noted sexual libertine and a libertarian, and thus he shouldn't be opposed to sex work being illegal or punished. That's a bedrock of principles, like in terms of libertarianism. I've heard him say before that he believes that in past appearances, that sex work shouldn't be criminalized. But principles don't matter when you're a hatchet man.
He's a rat fuck, of course!
Yeah, it doesn't matter if what you're doing is directly opposed to what you believe. It doesn't fucking matter.
No.
This wasn't the only thing that Roger did in his attack on Eliot Spitzer. Previous to snitching to the FBI, at about 10 p.m. on August 6th, Roger Stone called Eliot Spitzer's father, Bernard, and proceeded to threaten him with legal action. Bernard Spitzer had nothing to do with Roger's political work. He called him out of pure ugliness and malice. As we listen to this call, this voicemail...
We have the voicemail?
We do.
Oh, shit.
As you listen to it, remember that the recipient of this call is Eliot Spitzer's 83-year-old father, who at the time was suffering from Parkinson's.
This is a message for Bernard Spitzer. You will be subpoenaed to testify before the Senate Committee on Investigations on your shady campaign loans. You will be compelled by the Senate Sergeant-at-Arms if you resist the subpoena. You will be arrested and brought to Albany. And there's not a goddamn thing your phony, psycho, piece of shit son can do about it. Bernie, your phony loans are about to catch up with you. You will be forced to tell the truth, and the fact that your son's a pathological liar will be known to all.
There are a number of flourishes in the vocal pattern in there that are like, that's fucking Roger to a T.
I think he wrote that down, too.
It's possible there was a script.
He was definitely reading off of a script.
In the aftermath of this call being released, Bruno asked Roger to step down, which Roger agreed to do, but he nonetheless proceeded to tell anyone who would listen that he'd been set up. First, Roger said flatly that he didn't make the call. It wasn't me. He was shaggying
That's
the shaggy strategy.
Nice.
Then a private investigator that Bernard Spitzer hired showed evidence that he had traced the call and it had come from Roger's apartment. With that information on the table, Roger had to pivot. So he claimed that anyone could have broken into his apartment and made the call, but also seemed to have no concern about his apartment being broken into. He claimed that he was at a live performance of Frost Nixon that night, saying that he, quote, highly recommends it to Governor Spitzer. It shows you what hubris and lying brings you. This alibi fell apart when New York Magazine pointed out that the company putting on Frost Nixon had a dark night on August 6th. So he literally couldn't have been.
Wait, the quote from him was, this shows you what lying and
hubris.
Oh man, lying and hubris. He, oh my God.
Both demonstrated by his own actions.
That's the same. Oh God. He's
amazing.
So fucking crazy.
He's a nut. So Roger had nowhere to turn, but he needed to spin this because the optics of having for no reason left a threatening message, like leaving a threatening message on an old man's phone, that's not the kind of dirty trickster image Roger likes to cultivate. He likes to present himself as the cunning, shitty, but brilliant kind of guy.
Yeah.
Doing those sorts of stunts. Not the pointless, petty, and just abusive for the sake of being abusive sort. That's not good for business.
You can be both.
No, you can secretly be the latter, but
right.
You want to present yourself publicly as the prior. Because you need that. You need that. It's exactly what you've always responded to. The Loki trickster god kind of thing. When in reality, no, he is a monster. He's a horrible person who's made almost all of his money throughout his careers lobbying and supporting dictators.
Yeah.
Like, if you look into who, like, Manafort, Stone, and Stone, who they worked for, it is a who's who. Not a who's who. There's other people who they didn't work with.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
there
yeah.
are a lot of murderous dictators in their ranks. And then you look at the three of them. And then the Lee Atwater got involved with them too, like the guy who made the
Jesus.
Fucking Willie Horton ad.
Man,
yeah, it's a slimy crew,
yeah.
and they worked for worse people.
Yeah.
Roger is a really, really bad person.
Yes,
not this comical bad person that he likes to present because it's easier for him to do his business.
I feel like as far as representing those guys and lobbying for the dictators, that's just more like knowing people because the job is open, man. You have to have zero morality in order to do
true.
That shit. So
it
it's not
true.
Like, it's not like people are clamoring, oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the
I
money
really
is big.
Want to lobby for, Nicola Ceaușescu. You
I'm
know?
Not sure if he worked with Ceaușescu, but, you have, let me get my list up here of his, some of his great hits. Mobutu Sese Seko, in Zaire.
Oh boy,
the United Nations said that he, quote, presided over the worst human rights conditions in Africa.
Okay.
He had made a habit of murdering political dissidents in public in order to terrorize the public, and embezzled at least $5 billion from his own country and U.S. foreign aid.
That's
and
a
Roger
lot of money.
Still worked with him. And then, of course, another one of his great clients was Ferdinand Marcos
oh,
in the
boy.
Philippines.
Oh boy.
Which I believe we've already talked a little bit about that dirty business.
Yeah.
So Roger, that's the real, like, version of the sort of business he's involved in.
Yeah.
He likes to cultivate the fun, ah-ha-ha, look at him.
Right.
How's he gonna get away with this one?
I'm a libertine and I fucks around and I got a tattoo of Nixon on my back and it's kind of ironic, but it's also pretty serious.
So with no other option left and needing to spin this, Roger Stone blamed Randy Credico. The Washington Post relates Roger's rationale. Quote, speaking of Credico, he's been on Letterman. He's been on Leno, says Stone. He does an incredible impression of former Senator, New York Senator Alphonse D'Amato.
Okay, so his argument now, as I understand, or his claim now, is Randy Credico
mm-hmm.
broke into his apartment,
right.
made the call to Bernard Spitzer, did a perfect
right.
Roger Stone impression.
Under the auspices of the Spitzer people trying
yeah.
to set Roger up.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
I
that's
gotcha.
What it has to be at this point
pretty
for Roger's
much.
Version of the story.
It's a false flag.
Right.
Yeah.
So he goes on to say that Credico has done an impression of him in the past, and then he really swung for the fences by accusing Credico of being a cocaine addict. That's Roger's style. You always include a personal attack that is somehow meant to invalidate the person who could be a voice that refutes your point.
Yeah.
That is how he does it. It's very consistent throughout his career.
Like you the American it, justice system.
You hear it over and over again in his appearances on InfoWars, even the way he attacks people who could provide criticism of him,
yeah.
all that shit. So Randy Credico thought the accusation was funny. Quote, that's hilarious. I'm absolutely denying it. I mean, he does have an easy voice to do, but I haven't heard him or seen him in years. In order for Roger Story to work, as you pointed out, pro-Spitzer forces would have to have enlisted Credico to make this phone call, posing as Roger, but they'd also have to have seamlessly broken into his house to place the phone call and brought Credico along. Oh, and also they'd somehow have to convince Roger to lie about his alibi the night in question.
Yeah.
This is nonsense. Roger did it. Roger totally made that call, and when his back was against the wall, he blamed Randy Credico. And this is why Roger thought they would never speak again. And there's a good chance that they wouldn't have. But they did, because in 2016, Roger once again needed a patsy. That's important. On September 3rd, 2016, when Roger had Randy Credico on the Stone Cold Truth, Roger's involvement in communicating with Assange was already well underway. According to Roger's indictment, by June or July of 2016, Roger was already telling senior Trump campaign officials, which many people think is Steve Bannon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not entirely sure if that's confirmed, because there's multiple references to Trump officials in the document, and they're not specified if it's the same person.
Like person one. They're not saying person one. They're saying high-level Trump campaign officials.
Right.
Gotcha.
So it's unclear it being able to track whether it's all the same, but a lot of people believe it's Steve Bannon.
Yeah.
So he was already telling senior Trump campaign officials that WikiLeaks had damaging information and documents about Hillary Clinton. On June 22nd, WikiLeaks released the DNC emails, and 3 days later, Roger emailed Jerome Corsi and told him to, quote, get to Assange at the Ecuadorian embassy in London and get the pending emails. Corsi forwarded the email that Roger had sent him to Ted Malik, who we've seen pop up a time or two on InfoWars in the past.
Yeah.
He's a British weirdo he's famous for the declaration, Davos man is dead.
Yeah, he might as well be called Ted Moloch.
He's a bit of a fraud himself. We've gone over him in the past. But he's not really all that important, except for he's not named in this, and he's not like a person one, two, or three either in the document, which I find weird. It makes me think that maybe he's not a target.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's cooperating or something like that. I don't know. I don't know what to make of that. But
it was worth it for me to get that demon joke in there.
Sure.
Ha 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 ha.
So, the way that the command is delivered to Corsi doesn't seem to imply that this is an unreasonable thing for Roger to be asking of him. He doesn't tell him to try to get to Assange. The way it's phrased heavily implies that they had reason to believe that they could in fact get in touch with him. By August 2nd, 2016, Corsi was emailing Roger with suggestions that he knew what the next right-wing coordinated attack on Hillary was going to be. Quote, would not hurt to start suggesting HRC old, memory bad, has stroke. Corsi also told Roger that he expected the next batch of emails would have to do with the Clinton Foundation. Almost immediately, Roger began telling everyone that he'd spoken to Assange and the next documents would likely be about the foundation, almost as if he was repeating and embellishing the things Corsi told him. Roger would continue claiming that he had spoken with WikiLeaks until WikiLeaks put out a statement in mid-August saying they had not communicated with him, so his story changed to have him having talked to them through an intermediary. On August 23rd, 2016, Roger was a guest on Randy Credico's radio show, and Credico asked Roger about how Roger had been in communication with Assange. In that interview, Roger told Randy Credico, quote, we, meaning him and Assange, have a mutual friend, someone we both trust, and therefore I'm a recipient of pretty good information. The date of this interview is important, because it predates Randy Credico ever speaking with Julian Assange. The first time the two were in contact was when Assange was a guest on Credico's radio show on August 25th, 2016. Roger's communication, through intermediaries or not, predates the possibility of Randy Credico being his intermediary. Jerome Corsi was the person who was coordinating with Roger on this front, but Roger couldn't blame Corsi. The two were too connected, and throwing Corsi under the bus would raise too many dicey questions. But Randy Credico was perfect. It was plausible, since Assange had been on Credico's show, thus there was a kernel of an idea that Roger could work with. But more importantly, blaming Credico, in theory, didn't lead anywhere. Credico wasn't aware of any of the internal machinations, but Corsi was. This is why when Roger testified in front of the House Intelligence Committee, he said his intermediary was Credico and never brought up Jerome Corsi. Because he needed that to be the perception.
Mm-hmm.
By November 2017, Roger had publicly claimed that Credico was his go-between with Assange. And unsurprisingly, Credico got a request from the House committee to come testify. He texted Roger about it, and Roger replied with a quote from Richard Nixon. Quote, stonewall it, plead the fifth, anything to save the plan. This is a paraphrasing.
What?
That's pretty overt.
Wow.
Yeah. This is a paraphrasing of something that Nixon told John N. Mitchell, his former attorney general, on March 22nd, 1973, approximately 11 months before he would be formally impeached. Much like Nixon, Roger was stupid enough to say something like that in a manner that would be recorded. On November 28, 2017, Credico was subpoenaed by the committee, and he told Roger about it. Roger told him to plead the Fifth, but then 2 days later, he would run to Jerome Corsi and ask him to start writing some articles about Credico. Roger sensed that his patsy wasn't cooperating, so he planned the public scapegoating that he was going to initiate that plan. Corsi replied to his request by saying, quote, "Why not wait to see what he does? You might be defending yourself too much, raising new questions that will fuel new inquiries. This may be a time to say less, not more."
How is Corsi the wisest person in this story?
I think Corsi, low-key, because he's so boring and a douche, I think that we maybe underestimate how, like, yeah, involved in how, shit he how, might be.
Also, yeah, and also, so his go-between is Corsi. How is Corsi in contact with Assange?
He might also be making all of it up.
That's possible.
I don't know. But also, it could be through Farage or, you know, there's that network of all those people who are in London.
Right.
Could be Ted Mollock, too. That could entirely be. I mean, until we know more, I do think that Roger is lying to cover this up. I don't know what Corsi's game is. He could be making all of it up himself and funneling it to Roger, and Roger thinks it's coming from Assange. Or Corsi could actually be in touch with Assange some way.
So,
but either way, Roger can't afford for that information to come out.
Right.
Because
it's
a legitimate thread.
Yeah.
It also ties into InfoWars. It becomes a huge disaster for him if Corsi's in the mix.
Who knew our show would be incredibly relevant in 2018 or 2019?
Still writing June on your checks. So, 2 days after telling this weird Nixon quote to Credico in order to get him to plead the Fifth, 2 days later, on November 30th, he reaches out to Jerome Corsi and tells him to start writing about Credico. On November 30th, 2017, Roger Stone released a statement on InfoWars on the website where he extolled the decency of Randy Credico and how the committee was wasting their time in interviewing him. There's no byline on the story, so Corsi may or may not have written it. Either way, the editorial tone at InfoWars, it wouldn't stay flowery towards Credico for long.
Yeah.
And behind the scenes, Roger was anything but laudatory towards him. This is a trend that tried and true manipulation strategy. Roger said these complimentary things for two reasons in his statement about Credico. One, as a way to try and persuade Credico to going along with him in his "you need to plead the Fifth" plan.
Dear Credico, commit a crime.
It's a public statement on the website, but it's also a message directly to Credico.
Oh, absolutely.
Through the website.
Yeah, yeah.
And the second function that it serves is that he could use the compliments later to inflict further guilt, as Roger would do later, emailing him, quote, "Everything I've said publicly about you has been complimentary, yet you continue to act like Nunberg," referencing Sam Nunberg, the guy who got questioned by Mueller and then ended up drunk all over TV.
Jesus.
Talking shit about Roger.
Jesus.
Yeah. So the next day after that article, December 1st, Roger texted Credico and told him to do a Frank Pentagelli, referencing the character in Godfather 2 who pleads the Fifth, but also knows what the congressional committee wants to know. This is a really damning reference, considering that Frank Pentagelli was set up by Forleone and was being threatened into not testifying. Also, Frank does testify, then recants after he's been threatened. Then, he's threatened more and told his family will be safe if he commits suicide. So he does. I don't know about Credico, but I would not be quick to do a Frank Pentagelli. And someone who, like Roger fucking Stone, saying that to me would obviously be interpreted as a threat.
He literally sent two text messages that are like, "I committed a crime. Please help me cover it up.
This is mob shit."
Yeah. And it's referencing other shit where people fucking committed a crime.
You bet.
What an idiot.
That same day, Randy Credico replies and warns Roger that Roger needs to amend his testimony before December 15th, the day he was scheduled to testify. Credico was doing this because by this point he'd figured out that he couldn't be Roger's go-between, considering that he hadn't spoken to Assange when Roger was going around the media in early August claiming that he'd communicated with WikiLeaks. He knew that his testimony would contradict Roger's and was extending a very unnecessary courtesy.
Yeah.
It's unclear what happened between December 1st and December 12th, but on the 12th, Credico told the committee that he would assert his Fifth Amendment rights if he was forced to testify. Based on information that is public, I can't say what happened there. but it's really hard not to assume that had something to do with Roger. The fact that the indictment doesn't include any interactions between those dates is very telling. I'm no legal scholar, but I'm positive that Mueller has those interactions. And you can make your own conclusions about why they're not in there.
Dear Credico, I will kill you. I will kill you. I will kill you.
Or, I mean, there's one point when Roger's emailing with a Trump person, someone in the administration or the campaign, and the person asks him, do you have any news about Assange or WikiLeaks? And he says, yes, let's go on WhatsApp. So there's a decent chance that between that time...
Should have used Signal. I'm telling you. I'm telling you, man.
But there's a decent chance between that time Roger was communicating with him through some encrypted
thing
and saying those sorts of horrible...
But
to be fair, the things he's already saying to him just over unprotected means
is
pretty damning.
Yeah.
So whatever the case, I'm not entirely sure what all the details are. I think some of that will come out as time goes on, but for now we have to leave that sort of vague.
Right.
By the end of December, Credico had second or third thoughts and decided he was going to talk to the FBI and the committee. The timing here is interesting because by that point, Manafort and Rick Gates had been indicted, and Michael Flynn had just pled guilty to cut a deal. If you're Randy Credico and you're seeing all these people going down and you're mixed up with the guy who knows all of them, it's got to feel weird. You're being vaguely threatened by the guy who knows all of them, and, you know, the guy who knows all of them was also one of their lobbying partners for years when they worked with dictators. That would not be a pleasant position to be in, and I would be like, yeah, I'm talking to the FBI now.
Yeah.
You keep referencing the vaguely threatening things. I don't want to test if you're bluffing.
Who am I going to be friends with? Is it the guy who I know is guilty because he texted me guilty shit? Or the FBI, who have proven that a bunch of other people are guilty.
So Credico told Roger that he wasn't going to let Roger's lies about him stand, and Roger didn't take it well. Credico began making media appearances to clear his name and tell his side of the story. Then, on April 9th, 2018, Roger emailed Credico to tell him, quote, you're a rat, a stoolie. He also threatened to, quote, take that dog away from you, which is probably a reference to killing his dog. I don't think it's like a, that's my dog that you're,
yeah, I don't think so.
You're holding on to. And then, I don't know. So he also said, quote, I'm so ready. Let's get it on. Prepare to die, cocksucker.
This is right back to like hubris all over
again. You bet. When Roger was asked about these emails back in May 2018, Roger said most of them were, quote, probably fabricated, which is a weak denial. Most and probably being in there. I'm not interested.
Somebody broke into my apartment.
Right.
They sent an email from
Credico
my computer.
Credico emailed himself. Got to blame him again.
Yep.
In perhaps my favorite part of this story, when Mother Jones was reporting on these emails back in May, they reached out for comment from Roger, and this paragraph is pure fucking gold. Quote, in a text message to Mother Jones, Stone did not dispute sending this particular message to Credico, but he maintains he was not making a threat and contends that Credico is citing his words out of context. Quote, he told me he had terminal prostate cancer, Stone writes. It was sent in response to that. We talked about it too. He was depressed.
I'm going to take your dog because he's got, okay.
No, the prepare to die cocksucker part. That's what he's talking about. He told me he had terminal cancer. Prepare to die, cocksucker. So that was Roger's spin on it. Credico says he does not have prostate cancer and did not have such a conversation with Stone.
And he doesn't even have a dog.
So once again, Roger just being like real fucking making everything up. So this is a cut and dry case of witness intimidation and tampering. Roger was clearly lying, or he was clearly trying to vaguely threaten Credico into pleading the fifth, because he knew that if Credico didn't, Roger's testimony was going to be contradicted, and those contradictions would raise suspicions. Those suspicions would be examined, the timeline would fall apart, and Jerome Corsi would come into play, something Roger never wanted to happen. Roger intentionally lied to Congress to cover up Corsi's involvement in all this, and then committed witness intimidation to make sure those lies weren't realized. And based on everything I can tell from the charging document, he's dead to rights on this. It's a open and shut case.
The chrome-plated balls on this dude.
Sure.
Unreal.
But here's the important thing to realize and why I told you this long-ass story. Compulsive behaviors naturally trend towards forming a pattern. Serial killers start to develop routine behaviors, and habitual liars do too. Given the information present, it would be a stretch for me to say that Roger Stone is guilty of deeper involvement in the DNC and Podesta hackings, but and the dissemination of the Heck materials, but his behavior deeply suggests to me that he is. His response to early suggestions that he was involved in any of this stuff followed literally the exact path that his denials of being the one who harassed Elliot Spitzer's dad went.
Yeah.
It's the exact same pattern.
Yep.
First step, deny things aggressively. Second step, lie as much as you can. Third step, keep lying until people don't believe you anymore. Fourth step, blame Randy Credico. If you take Randy Credico out of the equation, this is also the exact pattern that Roger followed when he was forced to step down from a position in the 1996 Bob Dole campaign after he was accused of posting a classified ad looking for people to swing with him and his wife. Deny, lie, keep lying, blame someone else. In that case, an unnamed domestic employee, he said, had a drug problem, just like he did with Credico in 2007.
Yeah.
We all learn from our experiences as humans, and generally speaking, we have a tendency to repeat successful behaviors. In the case of the 2016 campaign and the propaganda campaign surrounding it, Roger replayed the behavior that got him out of trouble in 1996, 2007, and undoubtedly a ton of other times
that we're not aware of.
In this case, though, it seems like the underlying crime was too big for his patsy just to laugh it off.
Right.
And that is kind of what I feel about the indictment.
Wow.
Sorry about that, what is that, half an hour story time.
That was fucking great. I was enraptured with your storytelling.
There's connections that I don't think people are making. And some of it has to do with, I don't know, lack of awareness or lack of curiosity, perhaps, in some reporting. And then some of it is just like, I understand that I'm making connections that maybe can't be proven,
yeah,
but are definitely there. You know, the patterns of behavior are definitely there. If you walked me into a court, I probably couldn't make this argument to a legal satisfaction. But in terms of how I view, like, what's the most likely scenario?
Yeah,
I feel very confident that this is, and that's not to say that Roger absolutely was in touch with Russian intelligence or anything like that.
Right.
But the way he acted when these accusations started coming up implies that he believes he might have been.
Right.
I think that's as far as I'm willing to go.
These guys finally have to realize the worst thing that happened to them was Trump winning the presidential. Like, they didn't actually, nobody thought he was actually going to win. So they were just like, fuck yeah, I can show off my skills and then use that showing off to, fucking sell those skills to somebody else.
And it sort of feels like the classic, like, be all dirty and shit, but like, we'll do a good, well enough in this campaign in order to parlay it.
Yeah, they thought they were auditioning. Mm-hmm. That's what they were really doing. They didn't really, the worst thing that happened to them was Trump winning.
It'll lead to tons of contracts in other ways that we aren't as tied down as we now are because of, crimes against the United States.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know. I think that's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. We're recording this on Sunday and already there's, you know, articles are starting to come out about Roger saying like, look, if it turns out I know something, I'll talk to Mueller. There's already indications that he's like, I'm gonna get out of this.
Because I read the indictment. I realize that I'm fucked. Hey, I'm a slimy motherfucker. Who do you want information on? Alex? Fucking Trump? I don't give a shit. We conspired to steal an election!
Because there's another important piece to consider, and that is that nothing in that indictment relies on Credico's testimony or even, Corsi's. It is basically entirely made up of these documents.
Yeah.
The emails, the texts and stuff like that. There's no, like, he said about this. It's entirely like, we can show that at this date you said this.
Yeah.
You guys were having this conversation at that date. Your testimony contradicts that. Therefore, you lied to Congress. All the lying stuff, I know exactly that all of the lies, it's telling. I'm sure Roger lied about more stuff in his testimony.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But the things that he's charged with are all things that served to cover up Corsi's involvement.
Uh-huh.
Those things, I think that you can probably end up, like, Roger's going to plead his public case that I just didn't remember or whatever.
Sure.
And maybe that's a slippery thing to try and nail him down on.
Mm-hmm.
The witness intimidation is not. That is 100% borne out by those documents. And it reaches the legal standard of witness tampering. And, I think that he knows that he's probably gonna get 20 years. Like,
he should?
if he doesn't cut a deal, like, I can't imagine the way he's carried himself throughout this entire, like, last 2.5 years or so, yelling about Mueller every day on the radio, saying that he's guilty of treason and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't see any reason people would show lenience towards him.
No. They were nicer to Manafort because at least he wasn't being an asshole while they were investigating him. Stone is fucked and everybody hates him. And the only reason that he would get off is if Trump pardoned him. And the only reason Trump would pardon him is if he knew that Roger Stone knew some shit. And the only reason that...
And he does know that Roger knows some shit.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I also think that if he... I know that we kind of have slightly different feelings about whether or not Trump could pardon Roger. And I concede that he could. And everything is up for grabs nowadays in terms of what you can get away with.
Yep.
But I also think if he were to do that, it would be definitely obstruction of justice.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it would lead to a charge.
Everything that Trump has done so far is absurd. He threatened somebody through Twitter.
Yeah, I know. But that's Twitter. This would be, like... directly pardoning someone who tried to derail an investigation.
Yeah.
And that would be, I think that would be, I hope that would still be beyond the pale.
You would hope.
I hope. I don't know.
It wouldn't. And nobody would care. Because the right wing is like, guess what? We're going to survive this. We've survived so much shit in the past 2 years. It is nonstop. All of the illegal things that we've done. And it's fine. Like, nobody can pay attention long enough for us to not get away with shit.
So, now that all that's out of the way, we got the indictment stuff. I think we have a pretty decent grasp on what's going on with that, where that comes from and all that stuff. Now we can jump into January 25th and Alex's immediate response to his best buddy, the guy who tells him every narrative to do, apparently, Roger Stone getting arrested. And here is an out-of-context drop.
Have you ever heard Roger tell a lie?
No.
Hubris!
Roger's never told a lie.
Roger Stone is a straight shooter.
So Alex gets on air at 11, and at 11 at his time, Roger got arrested at 6 or so. So he's had a few hours, assuming he was awake. I have no idea.
Yeah.
This guy named Harrison Smith, he's this sort of underling at InfoWars. He's the guy who found those Antifa Soros documents on 4chan and made a big deal out of it.
Yeah, he's a brilliant researcher.
He's terrible on air, too. Has zero charisma. Awful as a host.
Yeah.
He was filling in for David Knight because David Knight had that heart attack and isn't allowed to host his own show for a while.
Right, which, again,
we support and applaud.
Yeah.
So Harrison Smith was hosting it, and it was atrocious. Like, I watched a bit of it, and I'm like, wow, how has Alex not bum-rushed the studio and just been like, we are in a crisis. We need... Owen, get in there. Anything. Call Joe Biggs back in.
It seems like he should have broken through the wall like the Kool-Aid man.
Indictment. Ooh, yeah. I mean, it just goes to show how shallow his bench is.
Yeah.
You know, like, in the day when you need a fucking spin artist in there, you got Harrison Smith.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Ironically, the only person who should have been in there that wasn't Alex is Roger Stone.
Yeah. I like, too, that Harrison Smith is trying to compare the treatment of, Roger Stone to like Solzhenitsyn.
No, that makes perfect sense.
He's reading off a teleprompter, and he tries to say the Gulag Archipelago. And he trips over the words so bad. It's clear that he has no idea what the words are, and he's just reading something someone else has written. It's embarrassing. It's so bad. So I was expecting, like, Alex is going to come in with a head of steam. He's got to write the ship, his own broadcast. Like, Harrison Smith is so bad that David Knight calls in and brings life to his own.
David Knight calls in.
Yeah, and he brings.
David Knight is the one who is who is saving this performance.
Somewhat.
Great.
It's still not good, but like, the level of talent is so glaring.
Yeah.
Like, we hate David Knight and think he's boring, but next to Harrison Smith, that guy is a showstopper.
Yeah.
So
I give it 2 days before they start comparing Roger to Martin Luther King Jr.
Undoubtedly.
This is the letters from the Birmingham jail all over again.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah.
So Alex starts the show. And like I said, I expected him to come in with a head of steam, but he's actually kind of subdued. There's a little bit of like a almost a focused energy, a little bit. It doesn't last the whole show, but it definitely starts on a somewhat even keel. And Alex's whole thing seems to be at the beginning of the show. I think he's aware how many fucking people are going to tune into his show to see what the fuck freak out he has.
Yeah.
So he's seeing excessive traffic coming to his website. Mm-hmm. And so all he wants to do is make sure that everybody knows that he's about to talk to Roger Stone, who's just gotten out of jail on bail.
Right.
And it is a world exclusive. And he's furious that more media outlets aren't saying InfoWars has the exclusive to Roger Stone. So there's a little bit of pettiness to start off the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a world exclusive. InfoWars.com reporter, patriot, former chief advisor to Donald Trump.
Criminal.
Roger Stone was SWAT teamed raided in a disgusting act of police state theater by the now politicized arm of the deep state, the FBI, in a pre-dawn raid that CNN, of course, had been tipped off to, with the reporter lying on TV like a Cheshire cat saying that he hadn't been. Well, Roger Stone last night predicted to me, he said, "I think they're coming for me tomorrow." He said, "I can just feel it. I can see it, all the preparation, everything." And he sent me a text message saying they're preparing to move in for the kill. And boy, was he right. So Roger Stone exclusively joins us. This is the first interview, world exclusive, right now. He just bonded out about 30 minutes ago, world exclusive. Roger, thanks for joining us. And you've got the floor, obviously, for this segment and the next. And please lay it out.
Alex, I can say I've had better moments, better mornings, shall we say.
Where should we start?
Not good. I think you can get a sense there that Roger, not into this interview. He's not Roger Stone, the character that we've come to know on InfoWars as a flamboyant, calling Adam Schiff a cocksucker and screaming about how he's wronged by everybody. I think the reality is set in, and lying is not so fun for him anymore because he has consequences in front of him.
Yeah, he's probably not used to that. What he's really not used to is being handcuffed to his hands and feet.
True.
While shuffling into a courtroom.
And he will address that a little bit later.
Yeah. That's something where it's like, that might change a little bit of how you're going to do business that day.
Shit gets real quick when you're in shackles, I imagine. Yeah. So they're having this world-exclusive interview. And Roger, in this next clip, is just basically reading a statement. And spoiler alert, this is almost exactly the statement he reads when he ends up going out in front of the courthouse and talking to the gaggle of press that is out there. So here is Alex's fantastic world premiere exclusive.
Where should we start with how you were able to predict this last night over the phone? What happened this morning? What happened once they got into your house?
I want to address this really quick. The idea that he thought, like, he predicted this is not that surprising.
Yeah,
like, pretty recently, Mueller requested his testimony from the House committee.
It's
obvious that he knew he'd lied.
Right.
And so, like, obviously, if the investigator is requesting those documents, that means that they have reason to believe that this will provide them with the information they need to charge you. So him being like, "They're coming." Of course they're coming, Roger.
And if he did predict it, that justifies the pre-dawn raid. Like,
it kind of does.
That's the most justification for the pre-dawn raid.
Yep.
He was like, "Oh, god damn it, I couldn't make it to my fucking hidden care of it.
If I had one more day."
Yeah,
whatever,
exactly.
Yeah.
And then what happened once you were in jail, and then what unfolded after that?
Well, the important thing, I think, off the bat is that after a two-year investigation, none of these charges relate to Russian collusion or WikiLeaks collaboration.
And I actually think that that's worse for Roger.
That's exactly what I was thinking. But whenever you were reading that wall of text, I was like, they're not talking about Russian collusion at all, which means they're charging Stone with something in order to make sure that they get that conviction, which means when they do charge somebody with Russian collusion, they have got that conviction already there. So they can use a conviction instead of an indictment.
That's possible.
That's
some of my feeling about it and what I think is conspicuous in its absence.
Yeah.
So Roger is using that as a way to be like, it has nothing to do with all this other stuff, but it does just on a secondary level.
Yeah.
So anyway, he's being fast and loose about this, but who cares?
Or any other illegal act connected to the 2016 election.
Prepare to die, cocksucker.
The Congress, in my testimony.
Yeah, prostate cancer.
Okay, sorry.
Matters that are immaterial and in which there is no intent. Any error I did make would have been inconsequential and it would have been inadvertent.
No, that's not true. I mean, we went through the lies.
Yeah.
But they're not unintentional.
Yeah.
You don't accidentally just forget, the person that I said was Randy Credico was actually Jerome Corsi, and I'm going to uniformly lie to cut Jerome Corsi out of this whole thing.
Right.
So, I don't know. I understand that he probably thinks that this defense is going to work, but I just, as an external observer, I don't think it's going to. I think it's thin.
Yeah, the spin is very hollow when you start your interview with what it essentially amounts to, I am sad. I am very sad.
Bad day, Alex. So you might have been able to tell in that clip there, Roger's having a little bit of phone issues.
Yeah.
He's having some troubles with technology, and that continues into this next clip.
Please describe what happened because your phone's been breaking up. Repeat, you said 29?
29 FBI agents showed up at my home, pounded on the door. I opened the door to, pointed automatic weapons.
Sure.
I was handcuffed.
Sure.
There were, 17 vehicles in the street with their lights on.
Sure.
They terrorized my wife and my dogs. Mm. They executed a search warrant to search the premises.
Okay.
And CNN was present. So
what?
CNN was tipped off prior to my arrest.
Cool.
Unbelievable world exclusive, Roger. We're going to go to break in a moment and come back and let you walk through what happened after that. But
do you notice how he's just describing what an arrest is?
Yeah.
Like he's a victim of it when it's the result of his actions?
Yeah.
That's not a coincidence. That's what all these people on the right do. Everything he's describing is exactly what you would expect. People with guns, of course.
Yeah.
The bunch of cars, of course. This is a high-profile target who is involved in something pretty messy. Not that you would expect a shootout to happen or anything like that, but
you do expect him to have a trap door in his house. Like that's why you're doing that, because you're like, is if he gets anywhere near that fireplace, it's going to spin around to the outside, and he's going to be able to run away.
Right. And the idea of like they put me in handcuffs. Yes, you got arrested. They searched my house. Yes, there is a reasonable suspicion. There's evidence.
Yeah.
Further evidence, there.
Yeah.
So, like, all this stuff is like, this falls on deaf ears when he is involved with an outlet that routinely demonizes black youths that are killed by police.
Literally just thinking, like, all the subtext to this is Alex going, like, but you're not black.
I don't even think that what Roger's coming from is a race standpoint. It's a status standpoint.
Right.
He has like a, how dare you do this to, do you know who I am?
There's that
sort of feel to it. And, whatever. So, in this next clip, what we hear is that, Alex is trying to boost, Roger's press conference, talk about how awesome it is, but he still only seems to care that he got to talk to him before the press conference.
Ladies and gentlemen, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of reporters are queued up in Florida outside the courthouse trying to get an interview with Roger Stone. Well, he's here exclusively, global exclusive, and he's going to make them wait while literally hundreds and hundreds more pile up. One of the biggest press conferences in history.
He goes on to later say it's bigger than OJ's press conference, and a couple points on that. OJ's press conference was an official event, and it was indoors in a small ballroom. Of course, there's more people outside the Florida courthouse where notorious dickhole Roger Stone is getting processed. Of course, people. If I were in Florida, I would drive a couple hours.
Oh, for sure.
To show up and
for sure
and, yell something at him.
Yeah,
it would be great. So I only imagine that tons of people were like, oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's why there's tons of people there. It's not like it's actually like most of them think this is newsworthy or like bigger than OJ.
Although, wouldn't mind, like, just from a standpoint, I think a treasured thing that I would like on my phone is like video of him with shackles on. Like, I would watch that anytime I'm sad. I would watch that and be like, we got him.
Yeah. There's something gratifying about that. Although I will say on Friday when I woke up, this news had broken. It was a tragedy for me.
Yeah.
I've been in the middle of trying to work on a very in-depth Wednesday episode for us, and I'd put in like 3 straight days. I was getting it all ready. I'm like, oh, damn it, universe. Now you're throwing me off course. I got to do this Roger Stone shit. But hey, you know, life progresses at its own pace, and we follow it at where it goes. So you can see that Alex is really just like, this is the exclusive. We are the best. He's putting off all those people out there to talk to us because we're amazing. And here, Roger just gives him what I would describe as a boilerplate defense, and I don't believe it.
Down to alleged false statements to the Congress, and I contest all of them. And my testimony would be honest mistake of memory, and they would be immaterial. They would be inconsequential. You know, it's a political, I think it's a politically motivated.
Well, Roger, I've talked to a lot of national members. I've talked to a lot of national members of the press today who are just flabbergasted right now because they've read the indictment, and you have Randy Credico saying he was talking to Assange and that he was the go-between. I remember back at the time this being discussed, you said you knew a talk show host that knew lawyers from WikiLeaks. Everybody was trying to talk to WikiLeaks. So, again, we've talked about this a million times. This is making journalism illegal.
Only.
Yeah.
Only if you're bluffing about what the indictment actually says.
Right.
Alex is, it's just a shit spin. But this indicates to me that this is the direction Roger's trying to go with his defense. And I think it's not the right defense. I don't know what the right defense would be, and it's not my responsibility to come up with it. But this is very soft, as we've already complained about.
Here's my pitch. Leave a threatening voicemail on every senator's... I think that would
not
work.
Not bad.
I think that would work.
Not a bad idea.
I think
idea.
You got it. Yeah. I'm going to kill the entire Senate's dogs.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
That'll play.
Yeah.
So here in this next clip, we see the beginning of something that Alex is the only person talking about in the entire world, which leads me to believe that he's concerned about his own well-being in the aftermath of Roger getting indicted, but not just his own well-being, one of his family members as well.
And if the press doesn't circle the wagons and see how dangerous this is, it's insane. And now, as you know, I've got Washington Times, Washington Post, AP, all these reports about witness and special counsel probe, former Stone associate, collected payments from InfoWars through job Stone arranged. I have my phone ringing off the hook saying, did you make the hush money? Are you going to prison? So now employing people and then giving them a severance pay that's in their contract, because that's what he wanted to work here. He made a pretty good deal for himself, but I had to let him go because I didn't like his writing anymore. It just wasn't accurate. Corsi now admits, okay, it was severance pay. Earlier he was saying, actually, it was something else. But the point is, they're now moving on to me and my father. And my spidey sense tells me they mean to move on us to take InfoWars out and to take any support for the president out because they know we got President Trump elected.
A little bit of hubris there, too. But also, I can't find any legitimate sources talking about how David Jones is going down.
Yeah.
The head of HR at InfoWars.
I like the idea of all of these fuckfaces getting together and then AMLO has to be like, whoa, we've got a caravan of white people coming to the border. We're going to have to build a fucking wall.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting here because this is one narrative that I'm not going to be able to really fully tell you what's going on. But I'm going to read to you here from a Greenwich Time article about Corsi and the situation that he's in now, vis-a-vis these payments. And we'll see. I think this is a story that's going to develop a little bit over time. And especially, like, I would love to get my hands on that contract.
Also, you didn't like his writing anymore? Did you like, you liked his writing?
I think there's actually a really reasonable, argument to be made that when Corsi went deep down the QAnon hole, I would have fired him,
That's
too.
Fair. That's fair.
So I don't know. There's a decent chance that he just got too QAnon-y and Alex did fire him.
Yeah.
You know,
That's possible.
There's a chance that Roger and Corsi were both pulling the wool over Alex's eyes in terms of their clearly documented interactions about talking to Assange. So,
that is really, really interesting, especially in the context of Alex saying that he told Roger Stone to go get me WikiLeaks.
Mm-hmm.
Like he
and Roger said, called Corsi.
Yeah.
So.
And then we've
Corsi
got the
called
emails.
Ted Mollick.
And then we got all these emails going back and forth of how can we do this?
Mm-hmm.
Shit.
So from this Greenwich Time article, quote, Corsi, perhaps best known for promoting the false idea that former President Barack Obama was not born in the United States, has released internal special counsel documents fulminated against alleged plea deal offers and published a hastily written ebook outlining his account of interactions with his one-time ally, the longtime Trump advisor Roger Stone, subject of intense scrutiny in the Mueller probe. At the same time, Corsi says, he's been collecting what he describes as $15,000 a month in payments from InfoWars, a website that has attacked the special counsel investigation as a deep state conspiracy designed to topple President Trump. An attorney for InfoWars confirmed that these payments continued for the past 6 months as severance since Corsi lost his post as the website's Washington bureau chief, a job that Stone helped arrange, according to both Stone and Corsi. The revelation of Corsi's arrangement with InfoWars offers new context to the now frayed relationship between Corsi and Stone and how the on-again, off-again alliance between two of America's foremost conspiracy theorists has drawn the attention of Mueller's investigators.
So when we talk about Alex going like, we're setting Corsi up as a Washington bureau,
mm-hmm.
that whole idea was Stone's. Mm-hmm. Like the whole thing was Stone saying we need to have him.
Or maybe Alex thought we need to get a presence in Washington and Corsi was the one Stone recommended
yeah.
and set up for the job.
Something like that.
So that's also interesting.
$15,000 a goddamn month?
That's so much
what
money.
What are these people fucking doing?
That's so much money.
The actual journalists get paid like a dollar every week.
Yeah, I know.
Insane.
Yeah, that's over $100,000 a year.
God,
Corsi's pulling
damn it.
Over like $150,000 a year. Corsi would have been pulling in just from InfoWars. Let alone his QAnon nonsense.
Just getting fired.
Yeah.
And that ebook is fucking
good.
Cannot keep it on the shelves.
By the way, I just got a copy of Mike Cernovich's new book.
Ooh, dude.
It was free.
That better be.
Yeah. I got it in case. It costs something later, and I think it's probably going to be a disaster. I'll let you know after I read it. Anyway, quote, Corsi said in an interview that he doesn't remember being asked by Mueller's investigators about those payments, but he added that his brain was a mush after 40 hours of questioning over several days and he might have forgotten. Quote, it's pretty far-fetched, Corsi said of the notion he was paid to keep quiet. I'm the guy who's talked the most. I haven't been hushed about anything. So, quote, after the Washington Post made inquiries into the payments last week, Corsi said he learned from Alex Jones's father, David, that the payments would stop, according to a legal complaint Corsi filed this week against the Post. So it's unclear whether or not quote, an InfoWars attorney disputed that, saying that Corsi was fired in June and paid the remainder of a one-year contract that ended this month. His InfoWars pay had already been scheduled to end this month, InfoWars attorney Mark Rondazza said. So it's unclear.
Okay.
I could believe either version of this story, quite
yeah.
frankly. I know that Corsi's up to some shit, but that doesn't,
right.
none of this proves that that was hush money. It
right.
could be a situation where it's like, fuck it, just pay him.
God, Mark Randazza is fucking raking it in.
Yeah.
So, this past couple of years for him, he must have bought 6 boats out of all the bullshit that so many billable hours.
Mm-hmm.
God, now I wish I was representing Alex.
Yeah. So quote, Stone, Corsi, and Alex Jones all said that the InfoWars job and payments Corsi received after leaving are not related to Corsi's role in the Mueller probe. Quote, I assisted him because he was constantly whining about being broke, Stone said in an interview. Corsi declined to comment on Stone's characterization of his finances. So, this is real back and forth nonsense,
God
is what
it.
I would describe it.
Corsi. Put a little away.
Mm-hmm.
Put a little bit away. That's just good advice.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
So it's interesting to me, too, because this article has some stuff that I don't know if I was, like, aware of. So in terms of, like, Roger and Corsi coming together, there's this sort of – I didn't realize this, and I'm not sure if this is exactly true or if it's the public story. But.
Yeah.
Here from this Greenwich Time article again. Quote, Stone has previously told the Post that he became aware of the conspiracy theorist, Jerm Corsi,
right.
and conservative writer when Trump posed a question to him in 2011. Who's this guy, Jerome Corsi? When Stone asked Trump why he wanted to know about Corsi, Trump responded, quote, I've been talking to him. Corsi had recently published a book titled Where's the Birth Certificate? The Case that Barack Obama is Not Eligible to Be President. Trump became the most public, ardent supporter of Corsi's theory, staging splashy public appearances to taunt Obama to provide more proof about his birth. So then it goes on to say, quote, Stone and Corsi's relationship continued after Trump's victory. Stone suggested they both go to work for InfoWars, Corsi said in an interview. Rondazza, the InfoWars attorney, told the Post that Corsi was one of 15 people who Stone recommended to Jones as possible chiefs of the new Washington Bureau for the conspiracy site. So, like I said, I don't know. Even with this information from this Greenwich Time article,
yeah,
like you get some interesting glimpses into like the version of the story that people are presenting.
Right.
But I can't suss the truth out about this. I don't know what those payments were to Corsi. I can't claim to. It's an interesting thing that I think will develop as the two of them start shitting all over each other.
Right.
And that Corsi has indicated that he's willing to work with the probe, the Mueller probe.
Yeah.
So, like, this could get really ugly, and we might learn a lot more in the future. But
yeah,
for now,
we're in a triple prisoner's dilemma now.
Yeah, and everyone's a liar. So for now, we have to put a pin in the Corsi payments narrative, although it is something I'm very interested in. So
I feel like this is this is like a Tarantino Mexican standoff. Like every one of them has a gun pointed at each other's head, and they're all going to wind up shooting each other.
Yeah, it does seem like politically that is what's going to happen. Yeah.
Well, I mean, maybe literally. I don't know. It's going to be a weird couple of years.
Yeah. So in this next clip, Alex is still trying to do his world exclusive interview with Roger, and he throws it to Roger, and then there's phone issues.
So, Roger, you have the floor to the real world right now to make the statements. They're encamped at your house. The FBI's put a big tarp up so the helicopters can show it. They're moving in to your home, looking for anything they can. Obviously, there's nothing. This is so historic. So, Roger, world exclusive, your thoughts about what's happening, what's unfolding. Get him back on. Man, his phone has people calling it. Boom, 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 boom. And I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't break into it and cut it off. We've had a lot of that go on.
Yep.
I mean, my phone all the time starts dialing people and going places and doing things. It's insane. It's absolutely insane.
Probably malware from all the porn he's looking at on his phone. All the bad websites
Ouch.
He's
going
to. I mean, we have evidence he looks at porn on that phone.
True.
There's
true.
No doubt about it. Anyway.
At the office, that's an HR nightmare.
Yeah. Not if your dad
not
is
Not if your dad is
So the humor there is really fun of like, Roger. Shit. Just he's not there. So,
this is the best you've ever done.
Alex has got to kill some time now because Roger, they got to get him back on the phone. And so he starts complaining about his position in life. And, then he starts talking finances. And
of
you
course.
Might be surprised by some of these numbers.
Oh, God.
BuzzFeed gets $300 million a year and doesn't have the traffic of InfoWars with our combined network.
Are you fucking kidding? Those
BuzzFeed.
Videos. The videos that BuzzFeed has that all like 18 million views and shit, like those channels are massive.
Also, BuzzFeed just laid off. Well, I mean, these people are owned by fucking evil
right.
corporate motherfuckers. So.
Right. But just the proposition that Alex is bigger than BuzzFeed
yeah.
is absurd.
Yeah.
We sell $40-50 million of product, but it's literally marked down to half cost. So then that's gross $20 million. Well, no, gross 40. Then we keep 20. Then you hire all the crew, pay all the services, pay for the bandwidth, do everything. I'm left with a couple million, and then it literally all goes to lawyers.
That is a bad setup.
Yeah.
If you're paying a couple million to lawyers, you
God,
are not doing things
Randazza
right.
Randazza is raking it in.
And Tim Frugier.
He's giving up all other clients.
I would.
Yeah.
Actually, I wouldn't, because you could multitask on this shit.
Yeah, that's
this
true.
Is a cakewalk.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Just like file a motion, who gives a shit?
The hours are billable, but the work is very...
Yeah, I'm sure most of Mark Randazzo's work is delaying and obfuscating, which doesn't take too long.
Yeah, most of what he could do could really be fit on a post-it note
now,
that he mails.
If Alex is bringing in $20 million after paying off the products and stuff like that. Let's assume that's the case. I mean, rent that we saw the studio, not
yeah.
inside, but we went to where it was. It's
yeah.
kind of on the outskirts of Austin. So the rent probably wouldn't be that high, even though it's a giant space.
Yeah, I would say it's probably like $6,000 or $7,000.
Who fucking knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? Yeah. I would say it's more than that, probably.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
But even so, it's not in like an area of Austin where rents would be super high.
Right.
It's not like in the middle of Austin. It's not downtown Austin or something like that. So I think that he could probably have a very reasonable but high rent. Then you got to consider bandwidth, because he has his own servers and
stuff like that.
And that's probably a pretty serious expense, maybe to the tune of maybe a couple hundred thousand a year, something like that, if he does get the traffic that he pretends he does, which we'll assume for this.
Sure.
Now you got to assume Jerome Corsi's making $15,000 a month.
In totally normal severance payments.
Well, if you assume that that's...
Even when he was working.
Yeah,
there.
If you assume that's what his salary was.
Yeah.
Roger's making more than him.
Of course.
So Roger's making something like $25,000 a month or something like that, at least, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you got to assume. Roger's a much more important piece of the operation than Corsi. You got, I mean, if that is a salary that is possible at InfoWars, like, I'm sure he's not paying Owen and David Knight that much, but like, you gotta consider.
Yeah, David Knight takes home a respectable $2,000 or $3,000 a month.
I bet it's more than that. I would put him in the 10 category. Something like that. You know,
I bet Buckley's doing great.
Totally.
Oh, yeah.
But if you consider that is in the salary range for someone like Corsi.
Yeah.
You gotta cut down on some, as someone who is a big supporter of workers, I still think you're paying people too much. For what
you get paid what you're worth, Dan.
And that's
you?
Way more than they're worth. Unless part of that is don't snitch on the game or something like that. Like, it doesn't mean that the payments after the fact, of course, he's firing or hush money, but maybe all of it is like, you know, we're up to some shit. Here's a lot of money.
Yeah.
So you don't get complacent or feel negative about it and feel like maybe I'll write an encrypted email to somebody with our secrets.
Right, right.
I don't know. That's a possibility because Corsi is not worth $15,000 a month. I you can put that on my grave.
I
will stand by that.
If I was one of the journalists that were laid off at BuzzFeed or whatever, I would hear those numbers and be like, I can give up on my morals for a little while.
Yeah.
Just a year? I can freelance for the next 3 years.
I appreciate everyone who donates to our show tremendously, but the concept of $15,000 a month.
Cannot process it.
Bananas.
Cannot. I've never even considered that much money as a thing.
Absurd. So Alex gets Roger back and he's having phone problems again and it's not great. And they basically just talk in circles about the same. Like, you could kind of describe Roger's interview in almost in its entirety as being like, he's channeling Marion Barry.
Yeah.
That's what I would say.
Yeah.
Set me up. That sort of thing. So
it works for him.
Yeah.
So for a little while, at least.
So Alex thinks that he's got Roger back on the phone and he gears up to throw to him. And this is a little bit of a longer clip, but I think it's really important. I think it's so indicative of where Roger Stone and Alex Jones's relationship is going to be moving forward. And also, this made me laugh so fucking hard.
But Roger, as you said, you're not going to be intimidated. I'm very proud to know you. I'm honored to know you. You're fun to talk to every day. You're a good friend of mine now that I've known you I met you like 5 years ago, but I've gotten to know you the last three or three and a half. And it's just an amazing thing that we're in together, my friend. And so just talk about again the pre-dawn raid, your wife, what she's going through. They're moving into your house. We'll show the footage. They've got big tarps going
in.
I mean, this is just incredible, Roger.
Squatter's rights.
They're just having a picnic on the front lawn.
There's no doubt they're going in and dropping the phone. All these phones are tapped. I mean, hell, they admit there's taps out on them.
Nope.
So you better believe they are so pissed right now.
So pissed.
That we're able to talk to Roger. They are so upset this is going on. 80% chance they're cutting the feed. 20% chance there's so many reporters and so many digital cell phones and so much stuff out there. Now it looks like 1,000 reporters that can also make things drop. You ever been in a huge traffic jam and you notice your phone keeps dropping because there's so many people on their phones?
20% chance of the most obvious thing
keep
happening.
Science.
Yeah.
And we'll obviously have Roger as this unfolds throughout the day, but you can hear that his voice is almost gone. He's been up all night long. We have his exclusive statement up on InfoWars.com. We'll obviously take the audio and the video of this right now. Roger Stone's exclusive interview. First interview after being released from jail. We're going to post this immediately to InfoWars.com. to the exclusive first statement from Roger Stone after his arrest.
Is it exclusive?
Mueller, as a rogue prosecutor, sent text message last night, said they're setting me up for the kill.
Set me up!
And the last thing he sent me was a meme somebody made of myself, Faith Goldie, and Roger saying the
N-word?
The unperson disappeared. And he said, I think they're going to probably arrest me tomorrow. And I had a long conversation with him yesterday, and I said, how do you know? And he goes, I can just see it. He goes, there's all these puff pieces about how I've been treated bad, and it's kind of mean.
Mueller asked for my testimony.
Media knowing it's coming, they don't want to look like bad guys after demonizing him. So CNN reporter admits he was waiting outside Roger Stone's house.
Who cares?
An hour before the arrest. He's still not picking up? Well, this is just driving me absolutely crazy. Well, at least we got the world exclusive, but he had a lot more to add and able to reach out to the president and tell the president what he thinks the president obviously needs to do. And I just got
Alex's cell phone.
They said we're being hit with denial of service attacks.
You're not.
They're definitely denial of service attacks. It's not just traffic.
It is.
So they're attacking the feeds right now. InfoWars Live. Again, and the cell phone to Grant Smith, his lawyer, cut out repeatedly. And that's not Roger doing that.
Hello, Grant Smith.
So that may be again, all the bandwidth being sucked up out of there. I'm going to text Grant, tell him to call us via a landline. I'm going to text Grant right now. Okay, let's go to Roger Stone. He came outside. Here it is.
Stone is going to speak.
So you notice what happened there. Alex didn't know at all that Roger had left and was going out to speak to the reporters and crowd that was outside the courthouse.
Yeah.
Your
world exclusive can go fuck itself now.
Right. I have actual media out there and I need to plead my case because I am horse fucked.
Yep.
I am completely screwed and I need to in some way at least show, like save myself a little bit and InfoWars isn't going to fucking do it. Alex has a lot of power in a small sector. If you're not in trouble, you can pretend you're in a great amount of trouble.
Yeah.
And it's a great cottage industry in order to make a ton of money, in order to raise your relative stature. You can make your book a bestseller probably by enough insinuation in Alex's world because it just is what it is. It's a cloistered bubble that you can exploit. But when the shit gets real, Alex can't help you.
No.
And I think that is such a strong indication of it. He didn't say, hey, Alex, I'll be back. I'm going to go talk to the reporters. He just disappeared and left Alex hanging, and he knew Alex was on air. He knew that Alex was on air and making a big deal out of how this wasn't exclusive. This is disrespectful.
Oh.
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 It's a real dick move.
I think the only thing that I'm really furious about is Roger needs, in order for his image to work properly, he needs one of those jokey voicemails that's like, hey, how are you doing?
No, that was his lawyer's voicemail that came up.
All right. Okay.
He has a lot of lawyers.
That's disappointing.
So at this point, Roger goes out to speak to the people, and Alex plays the feed from CNN. And I don't know if you watched any of this. Didn't go well.
No, I didn't.
Did not go well.
Hey, Alex, just want to say I'm on TV.
Nope. That would be better. This was you know what? If this was a stand-up, I would say tough set.
Oh, boy.
You had a tough set.
Oh, boy.
Thank you. Thank you very much. He gets cussed everywhere in Florida, things thrown at him, assaulted.
I have always said,
by the left,
the only thing worse is not being talked about.
Say, don't let him speak. That's the left.
Two-year inquisition. The charges today relate in no way to Russian collusion.
We'll get back to this here in a second, but you notice how it's almost exactly what he was saying to Alex earlier.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's reading the script of his statement
in
both places, where Alex is pretending that we have access to more. And to be fair, he does talk to Alex for longer than he's able to stay in front of these people. He gets booed the fuck out of there real fast.
It's way more fun if Roger is getting booed while he's giving the statement.
And if you watch the video, you can see it in his face, the same thing you see in a comic that's bombing.
Yeah.
Like uh-oh, I'm usually pretty good at these things, and this has gotten away from me.
God damn it, he should have gone to crowd work.
Probably, yeah. Hey, where are you from? Where are you from?
Look at that shirt you're wearing.
Anybody celebrating anything other than me being indicted?
WikiLeaks collaboration or any other illegal act in connection with the 2016 campaign.
This is beyond a movie. This is a mad mob. No Russia during my trying to take his speech
intelligence committee
and put him in prison like you're doing the InfoWars.
Any error I made in my testimony would be both immaterial and without.
Oh, there's the chant I came up with for Hillary.
So I need to talk about two things about this.
Oh, there's that thing. Oh, it turns out it can be used both ways. Oh.
The first thing is I really, really hate to do this, but I might have to give InfoWars partial credit for starting the Lock Her Up chant.
Now.
Not Alex himself, but it might have been his employee, Joe Biggs.
Yeah?
Yeah. As we learned when we went over Alex's 2015 path towards accepting Trump, it took him a while. But the whole time he hated Hillary. Alex would go on to accept Trump as his Lord and Savior around late December 2015, but by October, he'd recognized that Trump represented an amazing marketing opportunity. So on October 15th, 2015, he sent Joe Biggs out to the rally in Texas.
Far, we have been able to basically weasel our way into the Hillary Clinton event. And right now, as you can see, I have on my Hillary t-shirt, and I'm standing in front of this Stalin-like photo of Hillary Clinton. It's very eerie. I'm literally deep in the lion's den right now. So I've got my Hillary for Prison t-shirt on under here. I'm going to release that later once she comes out and speaks and scream Hillary for Prison and take this shirt off and then start screaming Hillary for Prison. We'll see what happens.
Well, Joe, it's key you do this.
Okay, it's key.
Sure.
The Independent has reported that Michael Stoker is credited with starting the chant at the Republican National Convention, but that is way after October 2015, and it's pretty easy to see how something that starts with Hillary for Prison could be made more chantable as
right.
Lock Her Up.
Right.
I can't find any references to the chant that predate this field report where Joe Biggs says he's going to get a Hillary for Prison chant going, and he's kind of just doing it as an ad for this really cool shirt that he's got. Rolling Stone was closest to capturing this in their piece about the Republican National Convention. Quote, "You can hear the disembodied voice of far-right conspiracy theorist Alex Jones booming through downtown Cleveland from several blocks away." Quote, "Now we're going to push even harder with more Hillary for Prison shirts. How many Hillary for Prison shirts we got here today?" He screeches into the microphone. So you can see even in that,
yeah.
it's demonstrative of this being a really good marketing opportunity for him.
Way less chantable.
Yes.
Hillary for Prison! No, that's not terrible.
It's not terrible, but no. Lock Her Up is much better.
Lock Her Up is so good.
You can see the linguistic path that could have been charted from that.
Absolutely.
Also, Alex has brass fucking balls to complain about people yelling stuff at Roger while he tries to give a press conference. On October 6th, 2016, Alex Jones announced the Bill Clinton is a Rapist contest.
I was going to say, yeah.
Where he would give anyone who $1,000 to wear an InfoWars-branded Bill Clinton shirt on TV for at least 5 seconds, and you'd get $5,000 if you could be heard saying Bill Clinton is a rapist.
Well, now that I know he can afford that shit, he hasn't been paying anybody.
Naturally, this took off, and InfoWarriors began interrupting news remotes and Democrat speeches in hopes of getting a payout, or honestly, probably not even caring about the money. Alex had provided a focused strategy and completely normalized the antisocial behavior they were longing to express. In Alex's Bill Clinton contest sizzle reel, there's multiple clips of his listeners interrupting speeches and press conferences at Alex's own behest. I would say that yelling "lock him up" at Roger's press conference could be seen as, you know, being like rooted in the same antisocial impulse that those InfoWarriors were engaging in, but I think the context is different. Yelling that at Roger falls under the heading of parody, as well as coming from a place that's closer to righteous indignation.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give it a pass. But Alex is insane to be like, they're trying to take away his free speech
right.
by doing something that I literally paid people to do not 3 years ago,
right.
2.5 years ago. And in that Joe Biggs clip we played from from October 2015, he's going to a Hillary rally and trying to create a spectacle and yell Hillary for Prison. So it is the same behavior.
Yeah.
It's just, you know what it turns out? A lot more people will come and yell at Roger Stone.
It's not hard.
Yeah.
I'm usually against mobs, but I wish I was part of that mob!
It does seem like it might be a great time.
Well, what do you think you would scream?
That's gonna be, what?
What would you scream at him?
I don't know. I'd need to workshop it for a bit. Off the top of my head, nothing really comes to mind.
Off the dome, I think I would scream, cut his dick off. But that's not really chantable. I think that would be like after the chant has kind of died down and you got that one guy who's trying to get it started up again and he's just like, he's just a little bit off and he's just like, cut his dick off! And everybody's like, whoa, dude!
For a second. And then they're like, yeah!
Yeah! Cut his dick off! Yeah.
That's when Roger flees. Everybody, back to the courthouse.
All of a sudden somebody needs to be passing out pitchforks. That's the real tragedy here. There weren't enough pitchforks there.
Yeah, the agrarian life is, gone by the wayside. So Alex is mad, that people are booing him. And I understand why, cause it's bad optics. It turns into a situation where it's like, huh, maybe a lot of people don't like Roger Stone. And his listeners have to be like, why don't they? And then maybe they start looking into it and be like, oh, fuck, Roger's a bad dude.
Yeah.
But Alex cuts that off at the pass by, he says this repeatedly over and over again, that the people booing are reporters. And they're not.
No, of course not.
They're not. They're a crowd of people that have gathered there to boo Roger Stone.
Yeah.
Which is a very understandable impulse.
But as long
as Alex presents it as this is the liberal media, the enemy of the people, the fake news media, they're all booing him in order to create the perception that he's a bad man and all this stuff. That's a successful propaganda narrative.
Right.
You're going to trick some people with that. It's not true. But you can trick some people.
I'm usually against mobs, and I believe that all, like, not all journalists,
Hashtag not all journalists.
Yeah, oh boy, goddamn you. It would ever consider this, but I will be goddamned if it wouldn't be the most satisfying thing if at a White House press briefing, all of the reporters were just like, boo!
Hiss!
Boo!
It would be interesting.
Yeah.
So Alex is mad about that, but he has one criticism of Roger Stone. I don't know how I feel about this. I felt it was, I was a little surprised.
Let's go to this feed here of Stone. Let's hear this live feed of Stone walking down the steps. Or I guess this is from when he came down earlier. Yeah, he makes that joke and does that Nixonian thing. I don't think any of that's funny. I mean, I like Roger and everything.
He said that the FBI agents, the way they came, he said if they just called me, I would have come in. Are there guidelines?
Yes.
Are there reasons that the FBI, that's what I'm going to get to, that they had some reason.
That's enough from CNN. They did that to make him look like a guilty criminal.
I love the idea that he's trying to present that the media is trying to make him look like a guilty criminal when 20 seconds earlier he's complaining about Roger doing the Nixon, I'm not a crook sign.
Yeah.
Well, that makes him look super guilty.
Yeah, that was
a weird move.
I'm gonna go with, two on the nose. You know, when Alex is like, this is like a movie. That move, if it wasn't a movie, you'd be like, guys, come on.
Yeah.
That's silly.
So, Alex, at this point, Roger's, you can't get him back on the phone. He's still in front of these people and like doing poses and stuff. And so he can't call Roger. He's a man adrift. He doesn't know what to do.
Right.
So he starts going through like these feeds, like MSNBC, CNN, and all this, but he'll only play like a second of them because they start making valid points. And so he's like, get enough of this. As if he's fed up with the media, when in reality, it's like, I can't let this be on my show.
Right.
I'm going to have a tough time spinning out of this. And so instead of dealing with anything, Alex gets like really fucking weird, trying to make a comparison about what the media is doing to Roger and those FBI agents who SWAT teamed his house, how they're trying to make him look guilty.
Yeah.
He makes a comparison that none of us could have possibly expected. And it's about
Somali pirates.
Nope.
God
I wish.
Damn it.
I wish.
They did that to make him look like a guilty criminal. I've told you this 1,000 times. They'll have like year-long stings I've seen on Amish people who don't even sell milk or cheese. But the government wants their property, in a famous case in Pennsylvania, another one in, was it Michigan?
Oh, like Trump down by the border?
Hey,
for
now,
the wall?
Hold on. Hey.
Between a federal and state park, they wanted that land to build a road. A couple hundred acres. I've had the lawyers for them on years ago. Well, several of the Amish groups. And so for like a year, these neighbors move in and they keep begging, please sell us cheese. And finally, the Amish guy goes, I'll just give you cheese. And they go,
is that an Amish accent?
My cousin in the next state. Well, give it to whoever you want, sonny. Interstate crime now. Got an Amish guy.
Are you sure that's not a 49er?
Properly at age two. That's a real criminal you got there, real El Chapo. And then they come in with SWAT teams, guns, shove their heads down, everything. But see, the average jury thinks, well, they must be bad if they did this. Instead, no, this is bad.
So,
you're so close to getting it!
What he's trying to present is the idea that they did that to create the appearance that Roger merited a SWAT team, right. Ergo he's bad. And Alex, I mean, that character work is strong.
Yeah.
I don't think it's good for Amish or Mennonite, farm person or anything.
Whoa, there's gold in them hills!
It's really close
I'm
to that.
I'm gonna give you some cheese from all across the state lines.
Sonny, you can give it to whoever you want. So.
There you have it. Roger Stone is the Amish of evil.
Alex is way off about this story. He's kind of just making things up to make it seem like the government is constantly just trying to make stuff up about people to jam them up. And that's not even close to true in the case of these Amish those sorts of farms. Alex is presenting this as a case of just one Amish guy who's so nice and kind that he gives an undercover agent some cheese. The agent then gives it to someone in another state, and boom. Out of nowhere, international sales of unlicensed cheese. This Amish guy is going to prison.
Gotta get him.
That's bullshit.
Take him down.
In 2010, Rainbow Acres Farm was raided in the culmination of a drawn-out sting operation. The issue was not cheese. It was the fact that Rainbow Acres sold tons of raw milk, which has been illegal to sell across state lines since 1984. Within a state, rules about raw milk are left up to the state's discretion, but federal law prohibits interstate sales, and for a good reason. Raw milk is not pasteurized, and as such, there's no good protection against things like E. coli, salmonella, and the pathogens responsible for causing tuberculosis and typhoid. In the decade between 1998 and 2008, over 1,000 illnesses, 104 hospitalizations, and 2 deaths were proven to be caused by drinking raw milk. Raw milk proponents claim that pasteurization kills off the good bacteria along with the bad, so they're against it. Those people are dumb.
Yep.
Rainbow Acres was selling a lot of raw milk outside of Pennsylvania. A Lancaster Online article about the operation cites one example of Liz Reitzig, a woman from Maryland who paid over $6 a gallon for raw milk from Rainbow Acres. And she was far from the only one. This was a really large operation. One of the ways that these farms try to get around the law is by doing what's known as a cow share program, where instead of buying actual raw milk, farms allow people to pay a certain amount for a stake in a claim on part of an actual living cow, which then gives them rights to that animal's eventual milk production.
So they literally are 49ers.
It's kind of like that old saying, you need to buy the cow when you can't get the milk legally.
Oh, man.
There was another farm in Pennsylvania called Amos Miller Farms that ran afoul of the raw milk laws also, but their case is even worse than Rainbow Acres since they were only on the government's radar because they were definitively traced down as being the source of a listeria outbreak that killed at least one of their customers who lived in Florida outside of state lines. There was also Mark Nolte of the Nature's Sunlight Farm in Pennsylvania who got arrested for flagrantly violating state regulations by publicly refusing to maintain a state raw milk permit, and apparently also refused to allow routine testing of his cows for infectious diseases like TB. He was also selling tons of product across state lines. In an article about his arrest, it was said that he received a fine of $5,100, which is nothing. He, like the other cases that we're talking about, we're running large operations. These aren't little individual farmers being targeted by the feds. It's mid-sized to large businesses who are being punished for breaking the law. The Michigan case Alex is referring to is Family Farms Cooperative, which was a little bit of a smaller operation, but also sold raw milk outside of Michigan. In March 2010, 12 of their customers reported getting sick after drinking the same Friday shipment from Family Farms milk. Stool samples revealed the presence of Campylobacter, which indicates food poisoning. None of the cases I can find of Amish busts in Pennsylvania match up with stories like the one Alex is telling. In fact, all of them are cases where the people who got arrested were in fact breaking the law because it was more profitable for them. Probably not the analogy Alex wanted to make about Roger, but it seems like it's kind of fitting.
It is.
So it's accidentally him making a good point that
yeah.
he is like these Amish farmers.
Yeah.
They broke the law and then got in trouble for
yeah.
it. Hmm. All right.
If those diseases weren't contagious, I would be a little bit fine with people getting sick with drinking raw milk. If those diseases weren't contagious, I'd be like, hey, you're stupid.
In both of those cases, I kind of agree with you, except for the part of it being like, that one case, that Maryland woman who was interviewed in that article, she has a bunch of kids.
Right. No.
You're still feeding these kids that. They don't have the right to choose what milk they're drinking.
Yeah.
So I think that I agree with you in terms of adults. Like, you can make your own decision. If you have all the information in front of you, you still want to drink raw milk, go have a fun time.
Yeah.
You're running a risk, but whatever. You can do your thing. Once you start having it be like, this is what is being given to children.
Yeah.
In the same way with the vaccines. It's like, yeah, if you're an adult, choose if you want to get vaccinated or not, except for the contagious part of it. But in terms of like the kids don't have a choice,
right?
And they might be the ones who get polio or get measles, mumps, or rubella. So yeah, I agree in principle, but applied to children,
it's out. Actually applied, it's out. Period. But
sure.
It does make a certain logical sense of if you're dumb enough to do this. Then you accept
if the principle of you're only hurting yourself were true,
right?
Then it would be fine.
Right. Yeah. It's like guys who climb a mountain and then die, and you're like, you knew it was a possibility. It's kind of on you, man. I wish you hadn't died.
High risk, high reward.
Yeah, exactly.
You knew going in that scaling K2 might kill you.
Right.
Did it anyway, because how awesome would it be to get on the top of that mountain?
That'd be so cool.
I totally understand the impulse.
For sure.
Not glad you're dead, but
no.
Whatever. I think that's different, because I don't think drinking raw milk is an achievement. but whatever.
I mean, at the end of the day, what is climbing a mountain?
Just drinking raw milk.
It's just getting high.
Right. So, at this point, Alex is furious, because Roger Stone went out there and got booed. Which is understandable. I understand it. I get it, buddy.
Where was he?
What?
Like, what city was he in?
I don't know. It's Fort Lauderdale?
Fort Lauderdale. Yeah, one of those Florida cities.
I don't know what city Roger lives in. He's in Florida.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
It's where he lives.
I'm just saying that if that was even, like, if I got any kind of alert by that, I would start running.
If I got Jerome Corsi's salary, I would have jumped on a plane.
Oh, for sure.
I would have been on a plane.
Yeah.
To just boo him myself.
Just sitting next to somebody tight in a Spirit Airlines flight, just like, hey, what are you doing on here? I'm going to go boo an asshole.
For me, like, it legitimately would be like going to Woodstock.
Yeah. You know? we'd set a tent down.
Well, I mean, it came out of nowhere, so there's no way to prepare. But, like, it is the sort of thing where, like, 15 years from now, based on how my life is going the last few years.
Fair.
It is one of those things, like, I would love to be able to tell people I was there. I was one of those people booing Roger Stone. I wear it like a badge of honor.
Grandpa, what's your favorite memory?
One time.
Let me show you this clip.
One time there was a slippery asshole. He got arrested, and I booed him.
It's 70 years later. We don't even have phones. We're all on holograms and shit like that, but I've saved this one phone.
I brought my friend along, and he said, cut his dick off, and everyone cheered. So Alex is furious about it, but he's furious for another reason just than the fact that, like, it went that way, which should be enough, probably.
Yeah, that's fine.
But he's mad because he feels that Roger didn't listen to his advice, because Alex told him, if you go out there, they're going to boo you, which is pretty.
Alex did tell him that?
He said he told it to him off air. So there's there's no on show
proof
of
it
necessarily.
Yeah.
But Alex is mad that he didn't realize this is going to be what happens. But then secondarily, he's mad for another reason, and that again is that no one is recognizing that before he went out there and got booed, he was on InfoWars, and no one is reporting that he did a world exclusive.
No one is listening to me!
He's so mad. This is a little bit of a longer clip, but again, tracking the infuriate, like, how he's getting madder and madder throughout this next 3 minutes, I think is very important.
I said, you go out there, they're going to shut your whole speech down. You should make it about the attack on free speech when they do it.
Call Dave Rubin.
They did it. Boo! Roger didn't do it. Fine. You know, and total victory is just handed to you. Why the hell take it? But I love Roger to death. Then I've asked our wonderful crew, on target, focused, awake people.
Those are mad awesome, compliments.
Which they're doing, to take all three of those segments with Roger on with us and say, Roger Stone's exclusive global statement on his indictment that they don't want you to hear or see. Because you heard him come out, and I said when he first came on, in fact, let's get the first 5 minutes.
Cut his dick off!
That's what we'll do. We'll just re-air all of what Roger said next hour. And Roger's going to be popping back on with us. But imagine my frustration knowing the next move they're going to make, generaling, proving thing. We can get people elected and defeat the globalists. What do I know, though? I'm an idiot. I'm a moron. So we're going to come back in the next hour and play the three segments. That means the three segments.
He doesn't do that. I'm going to cut in here really quick. I don't think it's intuitive or very brilliant of Alex to predict that in an uncontrolled environment outside a courthouse, there's a decent chance that Roger's not going to be able to spin things as well as he does on the phone with him.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a great, like, bold prediction. He's not Nostradamus.
This is where you go, Bernie Mac.
Oh.
Just walk out
I'm
there.
I'm scared
there's
of you the, motherfuckers.
There's the defense right there. I ain't scared of you motherfuckers.
Roger Stone 100% could have gotten on mic and been like, y'all don't even understand. Yeah. I pull my shit out, this whole room gets dark.
Yeah.
Kick it! He could have had a DJ.
He's making
over $15,000 a month from Alex.
Yeah. Or he could have gone with Bill Burr. He's going to be like,
so many
I'm going to be here for 10 minutes.
There's so many great DJs in Florida. Could have gotten Khaled out there. Khaled makes a guest appearance at Roger Stone's press conference.
That'd be incredible.
Holy shit.
Buckley should have been on a flight at 6 a.m.
Even
this
better.
Morning. 6 a.m.
But then when he tells him to kick it, it's like weird sort of acid techno.
Yeah.
Like,
that wouldn't be bad.
Yeah.
That'd be very fun.
1, 2, and 3 of the last hour when Roger Stone was on. Because why? Because when he went out to 1,000-plus so-called journalists and reporters and TV cameras,
they all
booed and screamed him down. And videos coming out, they couldn't help themselves. They're so out of control. They're so crazy. The only place that linked to the one place you could actually hear Roger Stone
saying the same
thing was DrudgeReport.com outside of InfoWars.com. That's the only place. They all, with great discipline, were all angry. We're getting upset. We had people in the crowd going, oh, my God, he's on with Alex Jones. Well, yeah, he works here. They're trying to
indict me. Who in the crowd was saying that?
They're coming after me. They asked about me in the grand jury for a year and a half. They're trying to say if I pay employees that I'm involved in hush money for your stupid Russia crap when it's Mueller and Hillary and you globalists that have the Russians up your rear ends. So I'm a little wound up today, but we will get you, not a piece of Roger, the entire interview aired live in the next hour. We're going to air it 1, 2, 3, Swedish pie. So you can hear what Roger Stone actually had to say in one of the biggest media frenzies, if not the biggest, the world's ever seen, where they piranha-like have no Russia collusion. They're totally trying to set journalists up, ending all basic freedom in this country.
All of it.
And they drowned him out where he can't even talk when he's got a giant press conference because they had Democratic operatives all looking at their phones saying, shut him up. Don't let him talk when he comes out. Don't let him have this giant crowd. Because they've all got to cover it. But what they wanted was him being booed and shut down. And so he was in a big, disgusting coup for the deep state bastards.
That was a coup?
Bastards. So here we are, ladies and gentlemen. Covering this all, witnessing it, watching it happen in slow motion, watching the public drool and not know, kind of addle around and not know what's going on. But you know what? I'm awake, and I'm here, and I'm covering it. And I'm going to just say this right now. You want the globalists to win. They've already successfully basically stopped the expansion plans here at InfoWars. That's a huge victory for them. I'm not going to lie. That's their victory. The lawsuits, taking our sponsors, taking our platforms, harassing the living hell out of us, ahead of silencing us, which they failed to do, ahead of the coup de grace, taking Trump out, and all those little establishment minions around him that are lying to him. They're going to flush them down the toilet as well. So we're here as an emergency, warning the public, exposing globalists from doing it, and I need your financial support.
Oh shit! God damn!
That's
now
amazing.
That is a fucking ad pivot right there.
Woo! So much of this fucking episode is just Alex
God.
And Roger begging for money.
I slipped
so
on the ice.
So much of it.
I slipped on the ice.
That was that black
thing
ice
was,
there, man.
Whoa!
Crazy. Yeah. I mean, you can see a deterioration there in terms of, like, he's just so pissed off that no one's giving him, except for Drudge, no one is giving him his, like, you got this, Alex. You got a world exclusive. He's also probably pretty pissed off because as soon as he saw Roger speaking, he had to have recognized those are the same things he was saying when he was talking to Alex. Alex is being treated like another outlet, not his best friend.
Yeah.
I think Alex probably has to realize that means something on some level. Now, Roger's still giving him lip service enough because he does show back up. He does call Alex back. But I think that's probably just like, Let's not ruin this.
Got nothing else to do.
Right. What am I going to do? Go home to my wife who's been terrorized by the FBI along with my dog? I don't know. So in this next clip, this is so key, I think. Alex explains what he thinks that the media is doing to him. And then he repeats it over and over and over again. And he is wrong.
These people can't beat us politically. So they want to silence us, then frame us, then put us in jail. Silence us, frame us, put us in jail. Silence us, frame us, put us in jail. Silence us, frame us, put us in jail. Silence us,
frame us, put us in jail. Silence us,
and he tried to go out and give a press conference, and the press itself, they were involved because they're not the press. They're a bunch of Jim Acostas. They shout him down, his big opportunity in front of every damn news entity going out globally, because that was hundreds of millions of dollars of publicity. That was him getting to say he could do something.
So the silence us, frame us, put us in jail.
Silence us, frame us, put us in jail.
Now let's look at what Alex...
Pop it. Kick it.
Twist it. Let's look at what Alex did with Hillary Clinton.
Huh.
He sent Joe Biggs out to her rallies as early as October 2015 in an attempt to silence her, yelling Hillary for prison, making a big spectacle in the audience in order to derail her speeches in the same way that he is now complaining about people doing to Roger Stone. That silenced us in the way that Alex is describing it.
I'm starting to think that you're going to come up with some parallels.
Frame us. Alex always talks about the Uranium One deal, which is bullshit. He talks about Mueller on the tarmac with uranium, which is bullshit. This is all stuff we've gone over. He's trying to frame them for crimes. Whether or not they've also committed other crimes, I'm not interested in talking about.
Yeah.
I'm positive they have.
Yeah,
that's irrelevant.
We're good.
Yeah, that's irrelevant. The things that Alex is specifically talking about are lies. He's trying to frame them. He's a huge supporter of... and has made millions of dollars selling shirts and bumper stickers about sending Hillary to jail. He's tried to silence her, frame her, and put her in jail. This is literally what most of the Trump energy was about that Alex glommed onto throughout the entire 2016 election season. It's something that Roger Stone was instrumental in helping create and helping perpetuate. So Alex repeating this over and over again as if it's what's being done to him is bullshit. It is his tactical strategy.
Yeah.
Now, what's happening to them is the consequence of other things they've done.
Yeah.
Because they can get away with that. They can get away with all of their actions that
they've done
terms of paying people to disrupt speeches, yelling Bill Clinton's a rapist or whatever. That's fine. That's not illegal. That's fine. Lying about Hillary Clinton, selling off the uranium. I mean, we can get to the bottom of it. We can know what the truth is, but that's within your free speech to lie about it. That's fine. No big deal. If she wants to press charges, maybe, but that would be probably too difficult for her, and she knows that who gives a shit.
Yeah.
Fine.
And it'd be boring.
Making money off of calling for her imprisonment, it's all under the free speech. Other things you have done, like lying about Sandy Hook families, for example. Or Hamdi Ulukaya, and he settled that one, but that's another one. There are things you can't do, and Alex has done those things, and the chickens are coming home to roost. If he just had never done those things, he could do everything he's doing, and no one would care.
No,
if Roger
Alex
Stone
went,
hadn't lied to the House Intelligence Committee, he'd be fine. There wouldn't be a perjury charge, or let's be totally honest, if he hadn't threatened Randy Credico,
I was going to say,
he would be
that's,
fine.
That's the one where...
But my point that I'm making is that like if he hadn't done things that are in that indictment, he'd be fine.
Right.
It's not anything that they're doing on a political level that has caused the downturn. It's specifically illegal things they've done.
Yeah.
So...
No, Alex went home that night, and he asked... Rex, he was like, hey, hold on a second. Did you know that what goes around it comes back? Like, Rex says,
I've heard Justin Timberlake.
Yeah. Did you know there's a really, really famous and common saying about this? It's called what goes around comes around. And Alex was like, who the fuck told you that?
Justin Timberlake.
Ah, there's the globalist.
Sorry to force my Justin Timberlake joke in there twice.
Get it in.
So
I ain't afraid of you.
You think Justin Timberlake's ever had pecan pie? Kick it. So Alex gets Roger back on the phone, and Roger starts, now that he's done his public humiliation, I guess. He is now a little bit freer to talk to Alex.
Right.
And so he starts telling him about his experience, what happened after the FBI came. He's a sleazy fuck. Listen to this. He's talking about being put in a holding cell, and he, even in the middle of that story, has to get in a very not true plug for Trump's policies.
I was then shackled, hand and foot, heavy metal shackles, and was taken to a holding cell with a group of other gentlemen, all of whom were African American, and all of whom were there for some drug-related charges. Every one of them, by the way, supported the president's new policy regarding sentencing guidelines.
Cool. I don't believe that happened because I don't believe Roger had that conversation. But
of course not.
But, hey, let me poll the room, guys. Yeah. What do you think about Trump's new blah, blah, blah? But also, I mean, it's such bullshit because these are rules that have been in the process since Obama was in office. Yeah. Trump is just taking credit for them. Roger is given credit for them and then pretending that he had a conversation with all of these wonderful black people in this holding cell.
Yeah.
There's just so much there. It's like, why?
All of these people in this holding cell were black, and I will draw zero conclusions from this.
I think what he was trying to say might be the benevolent side of racism.
Yeah, I think he was trying to do that, yeah.
Well, but I think that the thrust behind it wasn't to, like, say, hey, I was in a prison cell and everyone there was black. It was to say that, like, there are a lot of black people who are jammed up on unnecessary drug charges.
Right.
I still think that that's behind it, but what's behind that is trying to support the idea that Trump is making things right.
It's the white savior narrative that he's trying to push there.
Yeah, maybe it's one of those things that it appears racist, then you look at it a little bit more and it appears like it's not, and then you look a little bit further and it's like,
it's super
it is.
Racist.
Yeah, maybe it is.
That's entirely racist.
It's a racism that comes in waves.
Yeah.
Much like the illness that'll happen if you drink raw milk. So the fever comes in waves. So Roger, one of his big complaints, and I understand this because he runs a style blog. And is a dapper gentleman who wears lots of funny hats.
Blog?
Yeah, he has a Stone Style blog.
I did not know that.
It's one of his big things. He also puts out lists of like best and worst politically dressed people. Yeah. So it's nonsense.
Alex, they're going to put me away for 20 years. And the worst part of that is I will have zero hats.
I bet his lawyers could get some hats.
You think they could get some hats? You have to smuggle them in a cake.
But how do you pair them with a prison jumpsuit? Yeah. That's a challenge that only Roger Stone could rise above.
I'm going to go with a bowler. I'm going to go with a nice bowler hat.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah. Something subdued in height.
Right.
So, look, the point is, that's not his complaint, right. Although it is style-based. He's mad that when he got jammed, when the FBI showed up in the morning, he's like, hey, man, if they just told me ahead of time I could have showed up in a suit. I could have showed up.
Yeah.
I would have looked good.
Yeah.
I didn't have a chance to shower stuff. He's mad about that. And he makes this complaint a number of times. And while he's making it this time, Alex's response is pretty funny and very bootlickery.
All they had to do was ask my attorney, and I would have surrendered voluntarily. I would have come properly dressed. Instead, you know, I didn't shave. I didn't even get a chance to put a brush through my hair or brush my teeth.
Well, Roger, I gotta say, you look great in the t-shirt.
Okay. Calm down.
I actually think he's telling the truth.
Well, yeah, no, I do too.
I think he really would have, if they had just been like, hey, come
to
the...
It depends on the advance notice.
Right.
Like, I don't know.
Well, he said he didn't have a passport.
Not now.
Right.
But there's a good reason to still think he could be a flight risk. You know,
oh, for
like,
sure.
I understand why any law enforcement agency would be like, let's not take chances.
Oh, for sure.
But at the same time, knowing Roger, his extensive history, the times he's been in hot water in the past, he hasn't run away.
No.
So, like, it does appear to me that
really thinks he can get away with all of this.
Yeah, I think he still thinks he has a lot of moves left to play, mm-hmm. but it doesn't appear that he does. But, yeah, I think that he probably is sincere in saying that if they just told me, I would have shown up.
I would have shown up wearing a monocle.
Yeah. It's one of those things that it's impossible to litigate because you're like, we're trying to talk about what hypothetically could have happened.
Right.
But yeah, I'd believe the same way with Corsi shit. I'd believe both sides of this.
No.
That he would have run and then he would have showed up. I would have believed either of them.
No, if he had said like, I had a biplane in my backyard, I would be like, yeah, that probably sounds right. You were getting out of here. Or like,
also, dude,
I made some El Chapo tunnels, man. It's no big deal.
Did you see that one of the first tweets about him getting arrested was from Chad Ochocinco?
No, I did not.
It turns out that Ocho Cinco lives next door to him. And so, Ocho Cinco was
that
out.
That is fucking fantastic.
He tweeted that he's out for his morning jog and he sees his neighbor, Roger Stone, getting arrested. I've only seen shit like that in movies. Just like, such an awesome, like, weird
that
cameo. Is,
yeah, that's so good.
Yeah. Only in a Roger Stone getting indicted and arrested story could it be like, Ocho Cinco's involved in a weird way.
Yeah. All right. No, that makes sense.
It's so fun to imagine that, like, for years they've lived next door. They have to have talked. Yeah. They have to be, like, on good terms.
Yeah, no. Top 30 wide receiver of all time. Why not?
Can you imagine Chad Johnson and fucking Roger Stone just being like, hey, how's it going? to get the morning paper?
Like that when they're mowing their lawn and everything.
Yeah.
Hey, we should have you guys over for dinner sometime.
There's a true comedy to that. And imagining that they did have each other over for dinner.
I'm sure they did.
Maybe.
I don't think they did.
No, probably not.
No.
Good walls make good neighbors, to quote Roger Stone. It's probably not a quote, but.
Although it's not.
I'm using the Alex Jones school of quoting, where you don't actually have to quote
something. Right. William Shakespeare.
Shakespeare. I don't even remember how we mispronounced it.
Shakespeare.
That wasn't it.
No.
So in this next clip, Alex and Roger start talking about Roger's financial sob story. It's real bad for him right now. Real bad financially. I don't believe most of this. And then Alex says something inexcusable.
I've lost my life and health insurance in December. I had to sell my car. I had to liquidate a small fund I had put aside for my book sales for the college education of my children.
You have children?
No stocks, no bonds, no real estate. You know, thank God for InfoWars because you guys have kept me alive. I have a couple other very small gigs, but not much. Facebook and their war of censorship against InfoWars and against me has really hurt my book sales. So the idea is to put you under such intense, financial pressure, you're forced to plead guilty to something you didn't do, and then in turn to turn on the president Michael Cohen style.
And let's be clear. You make that statement, but they're making their move now. They're going to move on the president. Dershowitz is smart. He's admitted it.
So there's two things there. First is
what's
that,
most offensive is Dershowitz is smart. How dare you? Well, how dare you?
Well, look, it's funny to me that Alex is saying positive things about Alan Dershowitz for a number of reasons. The first is that after Roger called to threaten Elliot Spitzer's dad, like we talked about, Dershowitz blasted Stone's involvement as evidence that the investigation was tainted from the start, the investigation of Elliot Spitzer for corruption stuff and everything. He said, quote, this whole story does not pass the smell test. What others have done to Elliot Spitzer, Roger, is more serious than any crime Spitzer committed. So Dershowitz and Roger have a little bit of a history. Also, fun fact, Donald Trump also shit all over Roger after he got caught harassing an 83-year-old man with Parkinson's, saying, quote, they caught Roger red-handed lying. What he did was ridiculous and stupid. He went on to call Roger a stone-cold loser.
He's a stone-cold loser, and I'm going to hire him any moment now.
Right. The other reason Alex shouldn't be into Dershowitz is that he's Jeffrey Epstein's lawyer who helped him cut a deal on those, you know, running an underage sex trafficking operation charges. If that isn't enough to get Alex to not trust the guy, multiple girls who were Epstein's victims have gone on record to say that Epstein directed them to have sex with Alan Dershowitz. The way Alex conveniently doesn't care about things like this should really drive home to anyone paying attention that he doesn't care about the exploitation of these children. He only cares about using it as a blunt instrument to attack his political enemies with. Everything is a means to an end with him, and it's gross.
Wait, so I didn't know that Dershowitz was a participant in the Epstein.
I'm not sure if that's been proven in court, but there are multiple of Epstein's victims who have said that they were directed to have sex with Alan Dershowitz.
God, that should be his chyron whenever he appears on TV. It should be like accused fucking pedophile.
I think you might get into
incredibly
some sort of
accused pedophile. It should roll on the bottom. Of it.
I don't know what the television news their policies are on that, but I wouldn't.
I wouldn't
say it's a bad idea.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty fucked up. And I mean, Dershowitz is a pile of shit otherwise too. But like, Alex should, like, based on everything that he says about all this stuff, should
Yeah.
The way he makes hay out of anyone being kind of associated with Jeffrey Epstein, except for Trump, who, of course, is associated with him. Ignore that.
Okay.
Now, Bill Clinton.
Racist and rapist.
Bill Clinton. He loves Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah, great.
So Alex, like, whenever his political enemies are sort of related to Jeffrey Epstein in some way, it's the biggest deal in the world. It's proof of X, Y, and Z, everything. Yeah. Someone who supports Trump or is literally Trump, you just ignore that stuff. Ignore it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
It means that he doesn't care.
Oh, absolutely not.
And then
absolutely not.
The second piece about this is Roger's telling his sob story about how this fucking the revelation of crimes he's committed is hurting his book sales and stuff like that. There's an episode of his goddamn radio show that I was gonna pull a clip of, but who gives a shit? Where he's talking about the WikiLeaks stuff had just come out, and he's talking about the idea that Seth Rich was the person who gave Assange the documents.
Uh-huh.
And he's saying that, I have it from a reputable back channel source that Seth Rich was the person who gave Assange the documents. And I would say, you know who else was saying that around that time? Fucking Jerome Corsi. You know who else is a guest on that episode? Jerome Corsi.
Really?
Interesting.
That's odd.
Now, the other piece of it, though, is that as he's talking about this stuff, he goes into a little bit of a diatribe about how, like, oh, Podesta is saying that I knew about it ahead of time because I tweeted about how his time in the barrel was coming and stuff like that. And he's like, oh, well, you know what's really great about this is that I've been able to go on TV a bunch, and that's been great for my book sales.
God damn it.
So if you're going to exploit this sort of situation and also exploit the murder of somebody to sort of further your political conspiratorial bullshit, and you're going to be like, help my book sales, I'm not going to feel any sympathy for you when you complain about, I don't have any money now because of crimes.
Now that I know that he has, how many, he has kids?
Yeah.
Multiple?
I don't know how many kids he has, and I think he has some grandkids too.
God damn it. Just the idea of being related to Roger Stone must be a fucking bummer. Man, fucking sucks. Roger called them from the press conference, and he was like, holy shit, did you know that what goes around comes back at you?
That's Justin Timberlake, you're quoting.
Yeah.
he's one of those dudes that I think, like, if you ever hear stories about the children of, like, old school pro wrestlers who had to keep kayfabe.
Yeah.
You know, like them being like, their dad would fake an injury and then to be at home faking an injury and something like that.
You couldn't even
let the kids know.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. That's how I imagine Roger Stone is with his kids, but instead of it being like sports entertainment, it's like malicious international propaganda.
Yeah.
And dirty tricks and hatchet work.
Kids, I know you're ages 4 and 9, but the first thing I need to tell you, and I wish I could have told you when you came out of the womb, never Google me.
Never.
Never!
He said that before Google existed.
Yeah, exactly.
Told them that.
Yeah.
This next clip, Alex reinforces that he is really afraid that his dad is going to get indicted.
As you know, Roger, we're next in the hopper. We told everybody they were going to try to frame my dad for hush money because Corsi signed a contract where he'd get paid out unless it was for cause. So to be nice, we paid out the last 6 months of his contract.
It was for cause, though, because Alex is saying that his writing sucked and he wasn't living up to his obligation. So his contract could not have been paid out. But again, the quote from Alex Jones's dad that was in that article was about, like, we decided to pay him out based on considerations and the fact that he's been a guest for so many years.
Right.
And I believe that, too. Yeah. I don't know.
And I'm a dentist.
That just so happens the end of January. That's when it was signed 2 years ago. So it's renewed every year. And I've got my phone ringing off the hook like, are you going to jail next for your hush money? So now paying your reporters is hush money. I mean, these people are going for broke, but put them on the defense. They're in Uranium One, hundreds of millions from the Russians, Mueller at Tarmac, Uranium.
Silence them. Frame them. Put them in jail.
Paying your reporters, fine. Paying your reporters $160,000 a year, that's a different fucking story.
Especially when that reporter is worthless. Like,
yeah.
In the entire time that we've been covering Alex Jones, Jerome Corsi hasn't done shit except pretend he's opening that Washington Bureau.
Yeah.
He hasn't done anything. There was the time that he tried to come up with the mem, which was just a dumb Seth Rich narrative.
Yeah.
We've heard him just shit the bed over and over again. And then be kicked off being allowed to be on the show because he went too into the QAnon stuff. He's served no purpose.
And he's actually a bad writer, though. I will believe that part.
I haven't read any of his books, but I bet his prose isn't great.
Nah.
So I think that there's a lot of people out there who are probably, like even before we put this episode out and as they're listening to it, they want more answers about the Corsi business. Because I think this is a really big piece of the Stone indictment.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I regret to say we can't offer much on that.
Yeah.
But I do think we will be able to soon.
We will eventually be recording a documentary called The Corsi Business.
Yeah.
I was going to get there first, you son of a bitch.
As soon as that information is available and soon we can digest some of it, I assure you, we will do a Corsi episode in much the same way as we're doing a Roger episode now.
Yeah.
Although I don't think Alex will even talk about it if Corsi turns south, if he goes state's evidence, state's property, like Beanie Siegel. Another rap reference. How you doing?
There you go. There you go. Killing it.
So as soon as I woke up,
did you consider your Justin Timberlake reference a rap reference?
No, I was talking about how the last like three episodes have been like 3 6
Mafia. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Master P,
you
now Beanie Siegel.
Yeah,
yeah, man. Jadakiss is coming up.
Oh no!
Next episode, Swizz Beatz, Dragon. That means dragon, but there's a hyphen in the middle.
No, I got it.
Yeah, the Rough Riders.
I'm surprised there wasn't a dollar sign instead of an O.
Nah. Jordan. When I woke up on Friday,
yeah,
one of the things that I had in my mind first was I woke up pretty early.
Yeah.
I was surprised that I woke up pretty early on Friday. I cracked my back, sat down, sat in this chair here, and got to work, and immediately saw tons of texts.
Yeah.
Twitter messages and like everybody, Roger Stone got indicted.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, God, I thought I woke up early, not early enough.
I was going to say, I imagined that you woke up at 5:30 because you sensed it in the ether sphere.
I was up kind of late and Roger is on like an hour ahead.
Eastern time, that's true.
So it's possible that I couldn't sleep because I knew it was going on.
Yeah.
But it also is possible that I was just playing Hyrule Warriors. Who knows?
Also possible. Well, Stone did text you last night saying, I think it's coming.
Yeah, he texted me and he was like, hey, Linkle's a pretty cool character. I agree, Roger. So I didn't, like, when I woke up, I was kind of overwhelmed by the amount of people messaging me about this, which I think is cool and I appreciate it. Don't get me wrong. But then my immediate first thought was like, if I'm Alex right now, when I started, it took me an hour or so to make like an egg sandwich and process and like sort of just get my bearings about me. I started to think like, it's 10. Alex knows that in an hour he's got to get on air.
Yeah.
He knows that right now.
Yeah.
Like as I'm sitting here eating this sandwich, Alex knows he has to get on air. And secondarily, Alex knows everybody is tuning in.
Yeah.
Alex knows that, like, he's kicked off YouTube and stuff like that. He can still broadcast. He can still live stream all this shit.
Mm-hmm.
He knows that all eyes are on him.
Yeah.
There is no way that people aren't going to be like, how's Alex going to fucking do
that?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And lo and behold, it was. It was a ratings bonanza for him.
We were getting 50,000 unique IP addresses a second. And we've got some of the biggest server companies in the world. Our regular bandwidth, you know, bills are $500,000 a month.
What?
Today's going to be $500,000. I mean, this is insane. We have tens of millions tuned in just on the streams, not on radio stations right now. Normally, it's not even a million tuned in at one time. So this is all going on. This is insane. And imagine the imagery. He comes out and they won't let him talk. Well, you just heard him speak and none of them are picking up what he said.
So Alex is still mad that no one's giving him credit for the world exclusive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't believe, like, I think that we made this point when we were on the great Behind the Bastards podcast with Robert Evans. The idea that Alex is real bad with numbers.
Yeah.
I don't believe those specific numbers, but I believe the trends behind them. The idea that he had massively elevated traffic from people wanting to see
what
is Alex going to do? Is he going to kill himself on air?
Right.
I know that probably some people had that impulse.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be like, he's going to pull out a triple Lindy. It's going to be the most amazing, obfuscating, excuse-making thing I've ever seen in my life. I was watching live, and I know that from our group, Go Home and Tell Your Mother You're Brilliant, there was at least a number of our policy wonk folk who don't generally watch, who were like, I got to tune in today.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if you take that as a small sample, there probably was thousands and thousands more people who were like, oh boy, here we go.
For sure.
So Alex knew that, and yeah, I think his bandwidth costs are probably high. Not nearly as high as he's saying, but all that stuff does make sense, and it brings into focus why he's more restrained at the beginning of the show, because he realizes there are a lot of people listening, watching, they have an expectation, I'm gonna freak out, keep it together, and then also explains why him and Roger keep asking people for money.
Right.
Because there's so many more people, there's a better chance that some of them are gonna give you money.
Yeah, for sure.
So all of this makes total sense. He knows that this is sweeps week.
Yeah.
As bad as bad as it is, his best friend is definitely going to prison. He's still a businessman.
This is the best thing that's ever happened to me financially.
It's possible.
Yeah.
It's possible.
I don't
do this without Roger.
I don't understand bandwidth costs.
I don't really either, because I use a, you know, like I just use a flat rate hosting service.
Yeah.
But from what I understand, like, if you host something somewhere, like if you have a server and you host something somewhere, and there's tons and tons of people downloading it, the price just goes up as the traffic goes up.
Gotcha.
In order for the server to handle that amount of traffic.
Holy shit. So
I think it's scalable.
We can't afford to be popular, can we?
No, we can, because we use the flat rate.
Oh, is that how that works? I don't know how any of it works.
The service that I use, you just pay a certain amount per month. And no matter how many people download it or anything like that, you pay for the storage space.
Gotcha.
So however large the files are that I post there, that's the factor that they charge by.
Gotcha.
And I think that their strategy is that they host thousands of shows that no one downloads.
Right.
And then that helps offset the ones that are the traffic.
It's called Medicare for All.
Right. Right. They've liberated syndication has figured out socialized medicine for podcasting. I think that that's their strategy. I'm not entirely sure. I'll be honest, I haven't really looked into it too much, but it doesn't seem to matter at all. It only comes into play if you're hosting your own shit and your own servers and you have to pay for that.
I gotcha.
Fine. Do it.
Yeah.
I mean, the reason that he does it is because then there's no way for anybody to take that down.
Yeah, exactly.
He has entire control of it.
Right.
And what comes along with that is having to pay that.
Yeah.
You know, That's the downside of the freedom that you so desire.
Which you should be happy about since it's libertarianism.
Sure. So in this next clip, Alex has a new guest. Roger is gone. He's got to go take a shower, got to shave, put a comb in his hair, all that nonsense. Go comfort his dog.
Nice little top hat.
Absolutely.
I assume his dogs both wear top hats.
There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
So Alex has a new guest, and it's so pathetic. His next guest is Roger Stone's lawyer.
Tyler Nixon is a great guy, one of the chief lawyers for Stone. I asked him this morning when I first got a first statement from his lawyer there at the jail. His first thing was, how's my wife? Okay, she's okay. Here's my directives and information from my lawyers. And get Tyler Nixon on and Alex Jones. Let him know, you know, this information. So we put a statement out that's on Infowars.com. That was the first statement. I had ABC, CBS, NBC, Washington Post calling, is that really Roger? I mean, how do we even know you? Oh, he only works here. That's how they operate. Like, everything we do is fake when they're the fake ones. And I'm battling for InfoWars' very life. So Tyler Nixon joins us, one of Roger's, he's actually a spokesperson. He wanted on.
Alex is trying to, like, I'm not a lawyer, but he is his lawyer.
Yeah.
So
he's a spokesperson. He's not his lawyer. He's a spokesperson.
It's interesting that Roger Stone's lawyer is named Nixon. I was really curious about this. Really confused.
On the nose!
I wanted to know if he was related to Richard Nixon, seeing as Roger was so connected to Richard Nixon, but it doesn't look like he is. At least not closely. Richard Nixon had two daughters, and neither of them has a kid named Tyler, and both took their husband's names when they got married, Cox and Eisenhower, respectively. That's right, Nixon's daughter married Eisenhower's grandson. So it's cool. Everybody's great in America. There's no sort of powered elite that intermarry.
Pitchforks. Pitchforks. Yeah. Why aren't pitchforks appearing whenever we talk?
Or how do we not know that? Like, how is that?
Yeah,
not,
that's a weird
thing. I'm sure a lot of people do know that, but it's weird that that's not more public knowledge that Nixon's daughter married Eisenhower's granddaughter.
That's
grandson.
Weird. That's weird.
So it just appears that if Tyler Nixon is a part of that Nixon family, he's a second cousin or some shit. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Tyler Nixon is one of Roger's lawyers. However, he's a bad person for Alex to have on the show and present as an unbiased source of information. You see, back in November 2018, Tyler Nixon was questioned by Robert Mueller about Roger's connections with WikiLeaks. You remember all the news stories about Roger's associates being called in for questioning?
Yes.
Tyler was one of them.
Well.
In his testimony, he indicated that Randy Credico was Roger's intermediary with Assange and said he witnessed Credico admitting as such.
The lawyer is going to get fucking oh my God.
This is a problem. Because it means that if Credico was not the intermediary, which he wasn't, then Tyler's making up information that he told Mueller about Credico, indicating that he was Roger's go-between. And that means Tyler Nixon is in trouble, too. This isn't a lawyer trying to help his client. This is a man who realizes that he fell into the same perjury trap his client did.
Yeah.
And on some level has to realize that his fate may be entwined with Roger's, since it's clear they both lied to achieve the same end result, which is... It might not have been Tyler's primary motivation to do this, but the end result is covering up Jerome Corsi's involvement with Roger Stone early on vis-a-vis the WikiLeaks interactions.
I'm sure he could probably – I don't know. Even if your client – even if you have attorney-client privilege and you're directed by your client to say something, you still lied to Congress, so you're kind of fucked on that front.
But also,
he lied to the FBI too.
And even beyond that, what he did was introduce new information because he said that he witnessed Credico saying that he was the go-between, which isn't like, it's one thing to say Roger told me this or whatever. It's another to introduce new pieces of information
specific
lies.
Yeah.
So in that case, I mean, who knows? I don't think that he's telling the truth. And I don't think anything Roger is saying is true based on my knowledge of Roger Stone.
Yeah. I feel like Roger must have, the sequence of events must have been Roger Googling like Nixon lawyer and this guy came up and he was like, wouldn't that be on brand for me to have a Nixon lawyer?
It's entirely possible.
I didn't know he wasn't related to Nixon, but his name is Nixon.
So Tyler Nixon doesn't, much like that sort of backstory being how he got hired.
Yeah.
He doesn't comport himself on this show as any kind of a professional. He's just throwing around the globalists are coming.
He's a lawyer.
He might as well be like Alex's regular guest.
Yeah.
He doesn't say anything. He doesn't even use words like pro bono or, jurisprudence.
Yeah.
I don't know. He doesn't say any legal words.
He doesn't use lawyer words.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
And he does say this.
He didn't graduate and he did not pass the bar.
No, and then he also shows himself to be fucking stupid because he says this.
The tactics deployed on Roger Stone, who would be just the first, I'm sure, if these people have their way, would make Lavrenti Beria and Stalin and Himmler and the rest of them, embarrassed or proud, let's just say, proud as far as, you know.
They'd be envious. Tactics. I mean,
would be envious, yeah. They would absolutely love to have this type of power.
So
Alex Jones beat you to vocab words.
That's not good.
That's not good.
As a lawyer.
A guy who doesn't know how to read was like, hey, let me correct you on what it is you think you're saying.
Let me help you out of that little pickle you're in.
Yeah, you fucking, God, this guy's stupid.
Also, I'd like to remind you that Stalin put hundreds of thousands of people in gulags. I don't think Roger Stone being embarrassed or like, a charge that he almost clearly is guilty of.
I think Stalin
could have pulled that off.
He would be envious of how they made Roger Stone sad and still let him go on the fucking radio.
Whatever is going on right now is well within the abilities of Stalin, Himmler, and anybody else they referenced. This is pathetic levels of exaggeration. It's radicalization of what they perceive to be what's happening to them. In order to convince the audience that the situation is so much more dire than it is, because they need their money. They want their fucking money.
Man.
It's just constantly give Roger Stone legal defense money.
Why is...
The legal defense money is going to Tyler Nixon. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah,
the whole
course.
Thing where he's like...
Of course.
Donate to Roger's defense fund. That's the guy who's getting it.
Yeah. Pay me.
That's nuts. I didn't even think about
that. You didn't think about that?
No, it just dawned on me.
That's so obvious.
I know. I was so wrapped.
That's why he's lying and pulling this bullshit.
I was wrapped
up
in the weeds of the details.
Yeah.
Forgot that RogerStoneLegalDefenseFund.com probably is paying Tyler Nixon.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is so fucking stupid.
Oh my God.
This masquerade of the idea that they're saying anything.
Yeah.
Is so wild. So nuts.
I don't know what exact a term I would use for him, but I'm going to go with huckster. I think that one would be the, like.
You mean, Nixon?
Yeah. And
ambulance chaser?
Exactly. What is it with right-wing idiots and hiring the worst fucking lawyers? Like, well, Giuliani is the worst fucking lawyer.
I think what it comes down to isn't being right-wing or anything like that. It's that you've exhausted all other possibilities. Like a real
lawyer would be like, hey, no. I'm not going to take this case on account of you did that shit.
Yeah, and it's going to be way too hard. I'm going to lose.
Yep.
It's going to be a lot of work for nothing, and my name is going to be drawn into this. My reputation will be completely fucking destroyed.
Yeah.
In terms of Alex, I think that there are just, like, his like sort of resources are thin.
Yeah.
And in the same way that you talk about like the idea that like this is just cha-ching billable hours,
mm-hmm.
you also have to recognize that like what you're doing, the possibility is you're going to be defending Alex Jones in court against Sandy Hook victims' families.
Mm-mm.
And the optics of that are never
Mm-mm.
good.
Mm-mm.
And if you're talking as a human, you know that Alex is guilty of those things.
Oh, yeah.
Whether or not it's provable in a court of law is another issue. But you know that spiritually, he did do that shit. So you can't, like, it's one of those things that you're only going to be able to get the sleaziest fucking people.
Yeah, and people
like Mark Randazza, like he.
Gonna say,
like,
He's turning this into his, like, little, he's laying stake to immorality.
But I also don't think, I don't think that's necessarily wrong of him. I think it's opportunistic on some level.
Eh?
But those people still do need representation.
Everybody has the right to a fair trial.
Yeah, and if he wants to try
and if Mark Randazza is your lawyer, you are not gonna have a fair trial.
Well,
you're gonna get your ass.
It's an indication, I think, that you have come to a point where you're willing to pay way more than you need to because no one else will take you on
as a client.
And you're trying a Hail Mary free speech type pass.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's going on.
It's like a cash for gold, or it's like a short-term loan, like one of those, like, why is the interest rate 200,000%? That doesn't seem fair.
You know why.
Yeah, you know why.
Yeah. So, Jordan, at this point, everything turns.
Yeah.
This episode is no longer substantive after this point. We have reached the point where Alex, I don't know what happened to him, but he starts losing his mind.
Does he start talking about God? I assume God.
You bet.
I was going to say, I was like, he's only got nothing on Roger Stone because Stone bailed on him, ghosted him. Then Stone comes back, but Stone's sad.
Mm-hmm.
So Alex can't like pivot to other news. What is he going to pivot to?
There is
like,
no news.
There's
the Chi-Coms are out of control.
Yeah. Come on. Fuck off, Alex.
Soros has criticized Xi Jinping at Davos.
Right.
Oh, you want to talk about that, Alex? Isn't that weird? Doesn't that sort of puncture holes in your whole narrative?
Sure.
So he doesn't want to talk about that. No news.
He has to look inside of himself and pray because he also thinks he's going to get fucked.
It's pretty amazing that you, like, I was going to do this whole thing about, like, Alex is done with his work and now it gets weird. Like, try and give some sort of, like, real vague, real fun sort of introduction. And you're like, he starts talking about God, doesn't he?
Yeah,
in this next clip, he starts fucking talking about God.
Well, we've been doing this for 2 years. I should be at least a little bit aware.
I'm complimenting your instincts.
Thank you.
Mainstream national news host calling up saying, word is Mueller's coming after you next. Want to comment? Yeah. I didn't cover up Jerry Epstein and little kidnapped kids on planes.
Dershowitz.
I'm afraid
Trump.
Of God, not Robert Mueller. And so I don't look forward to getting hung up by my toes and tortured to death. But you know what? That's a limited time. I don't want the full Monty in hell with you guys. So Mueller and all you guys, Hillary, you can choose Hades. I want to go with Jesus Christ. That's where I stand now.
Okay. So he has pivoted towards the religious section of the show.
Yeah, there we go.
And it's going to get very, very fucked up as it goes along. Like when I was listening to this on Friday, I thought the first hour was a disaster and super boring.
Yeah.
And we've gone over it in terms of like Roger's bland statements,
his
boilerplate defense on Alex's show. I thought the dynamic of Alex being pissed off that no one recognized the exclusive stuff, pretty interesting, but I didn't think there was a full episode out of that. And then it got towards the mid to end of the show, and Alex gets so unbelievably weird in the way that you would have expected him to come into the show with.
Yeah.
He just somehow delayed it because he knew there were so many fresh eyes watching.
Right.
And what I imagine, I can't prove this, but I imagine he did his first hour and a half or so lost a ton of listeners. They're like, all right, whatever. This is nonsense. I'm just going to watch on CNN or whatever.
Yeah.
Alex isn't bringing it or whatever. And then he started to be like, all right, we're all cool here. I'm going to talk about God.
I was going to say, we're in four ways to learn territory right now.
I mean, I don't
know. He's not drunk as shit, but we're in that level of weird, right?
We will get to galactic quests.
That is what I'm looking for.
By the end of this, we will get to galactic quests.
That's what I'm about. Yeah. That's what I'm about.
But before we do, there's one more clip where Alex is talking sort of political nonsense, and I think he's lying.
Almost all of DC sits back pissing itself while they send in Mueller's people trying to set us up over and over again. And I haven't released the big setup stuff yet. And I...
Because you don't have any.
I mean, I'm getting close to that, but it doesn't even really matter anymore.
Good says.
There are people that are either for the country or against it. If you don't know that every Democrat group says America sucks and needs to go away and it was never great and it'll never be great, and they have chance that we're not cherry picking. You think I go to some women's march in Austin funded by Soros or L.A. or D.C.? I've been to all of them. Where I see my reporter's footage. You think I feel good when I go, oh, great, the main march was America's going down.
That's not what it is. But also, I love the way he, under his breath, was like, I've been to all of them. Or I've seen my reporter's footage.
Yeah.
You haven't been to any of them.
Yeah, yeah. I like in a statement about how, oh, America's never great. They're saying, he says cherry picking. And you're like, you're really close to saying cotton picking, which is kind of the point.
Well, I mean, he also just refuses to engage with the actual arguments that these people are making. You know, he's just
right.
Like, America won't be great until we get to X point, you know, when we have, you know, just enough equality among people and we deal with issues realistically.
That,
those arguments aren't saying that America sucks. It's saying that we do sucky things.
Yeah.
It's same thing.
Lot of them.
It's the same thing that you do in therapy. You know, you understand the difference between shame and guilt. Those sorts of things. Mm. Like, you have, like, shame is I am bad. Guilt is I did something bad.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very important distinction to make between those things. And when people critique America for, like, I don't know, our interventions in Venezuela.
No.
Our interventions in all of South and Central America.
Hey.
Our interventions all over the world.
We turned a crime against humanity into a wonderful store. It's fantastic.
Our deeply, deeply racist history of slavery that pivoted and transitioned and was probably, to some extent, made worse by convict leasing programs that became the prison system.
The new slavery.
Right. All this sort of thing. It's not to say that we suck and should kill ourselves or America should be gone. It's to say we did bad things. We need to own up to those things. And that's the only path forward. We won't be great until we acknowledge those things and work through them. And Alex's his inability to understand what people are saying, not inability, unwillingness to understand what they're saying, leads him to be like, I always hate America. You choose a side. Overly simplistic, and it's what you'd expect, but who cares?
Still a bummer.
So now we get to the part where this is the beginning of the freak out in earnest.
Okay.
You already talked about God a little bit.
I'm excited.
This is interesting because in this next clip, Alex starts fake crying. But what triggers him to start fake crying is that he starts talking about a time that he actually cried, which is weird because the memory of him talking about crying leads him to fake crying. It's very strange because it shouldn't be a memory that's super painful.
That's fascinating.
Like, whenever I think back on times I've cried, that doesn't make me super emotional. But when I was crying, it was because I was thinking of something else that was an emotionally resonant experience.
Yeah.
The time I'm sitting there crying isn't the emotionally resonant. It's a byproduct of the emotionally resonant experience.
Right.
So Alex, for him.
Cause that's cause you're a human being.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Alex isn't. And so when he talks about crying, he's reminded I should probably pretend I have emotions.
I literally walk in to my bedroom and sometimes just lean up against the wall cause I've got strength, but sometimes I start to falter when I think about my kids and the people are this evil. And I start to cry. I'm not going to lie to people. And it's not that I'm crying out of weakness. It's that.
This is a fake cry.
I just can't believe it.
Wow, this is bad.
We have people openly saying they hate America, funded by Chi-Coms that have killed five times what Hitler did. And then all we're trying to do is stabilize the country and defend our people.
Watch the
pivot.
And then
we're attacked by a bunch of scum that's involved with the Russians and the Chinese and everybody else. And it doesn't scare me for myself. I'm not scared of Mueller. I'm scared that I'm not strong enough and I didn't do a good enough job to make sure that a goddamn pedophile army of devil worshipers, and I don't mean that in the Lord's name in vain, I mean they're damned to hell, didn't get control of our country. And that more people don't realize how serious this is and how they're planting false flags and how they're doing all this and how they're trying to destroy the very essence of a nation existing.
My favorite thing about Alex is when he gets on a roll and he has nothing and he's like, they're doing all this.
Yeah.
All the things.
Yeah.
That was
one of the
that was Spielberg's Wife and Temple of Doom level of acting.
Oh,
right there.
So bad.
Not good.
It's so bad.
Not good.
But also it's really interesting because you know it's all fake and performative. The way that Alex can only contextualize this fake showing of vulnerability if it transitions to rage.
Yeah.
That's the only way that he understands the presentation of that emotion, because he deems it weak.
Right.
He thinks it's a weakness. And then in order to compensate for that, you have to pivot then into strength. And it's sad. It's really pathetic.
Yeah, it is. It is one of those, like, I kind of don't think you understand humans. Like, it's one of those, like, psychopath test kind of things where it's like, I don't know if you feel human emotion.
It's hard to say because so much of it is performative.
Like, exactly.
It's totally possible that he feels normal emotions in his day-to-day life. And then this, like, it's so hard to say. You see this fake crying and it's just pathetic.
Yeah. And on the same level with this performative aspect and me, like, calling it psychopath behavior, it's like, I'm a performer. There have been plenty of times where I've felt like absolute garbage, but you know, you put on the comedy face. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
And
so
if you're making $40 million a
that's
year.
That's true.
You're not making it, but if your business is pulling
gross.
It in.
Gross.
And it's all him.
Yeah.
None of that money is coming in from David Knight's show. Maybe a little, but none of it. Like, it's on his back. So he knows he's got to bring it. It's kind
David Knight gets paid $40 a show.
It's kind of like having a big set every day.
Yeah.
Or at least in terms of, like, you got to do what you got to do for this operation to continue.
Yeah. Well, if you've ever read the Late Night Wars, it's like, oh, you guys are fucking crazy.
The pressure is insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't take that away from my consideration of Alex and, like, how bad he's living, but, like, it still, I mean, it doesn't matter. Like, no amount of pressure is going to make you this awful.
It's going to reveal that you are this awful.
Yeah, perhaps.
Yeah.
So in this next clip, we've been talking a little bit throughout this episode about how Alex Jones is like, they're going to take my dad, you know, like my dad's going down because of this Corsi payoff shit. And he's been sort of like, he's been basically making the point that, like, I'm paranoid about this. It's bad.
Yeah.
And in this next clip, he just completely does a 180.
Tyler, you know my dad. They're literally calling up like, oh, Jones, you're not afraid. We'll put your dad in prison. My dad. Yeah.
Oh, no, nobody is off limits. They will take everything
take him,
that you have.
Take him. He's ready. My dad's ready. He's taking him.
Yeah, your dad's a patriot.
Take him all.
Man.
Let's go.
Wow. Fuck my dad. Take him.
God damn it. I can't imagine how funny it would be if they did just grab Alex Jones.
David
dad.
R. Jones.
Yeah.
David Ross Jones going to prison. Anyway, in this next clip, we find, I mean, this is really what it's all about. Like, this next clip. This is it.
I don't want to be the guy crying, oh my God, they've got me. I just want listeners to know that one problem is we're too confident on one end, but if I wanted to really go up and shoot the bat signal out, we need to be flooded with money.
Flooded.
And I know for a fact less than 1% of people buy products on a regular basis. If just a few percentage, we would have everything we needed to defeat these people. But it's how God works. We always just get enough. But if I didn't have to spend time, and I'm not bitching, going around, people say, why don't you just throw Roger overboard? Or why don't you, because he didn't do the things they said, because I like Roger.
Well, I think the second one is more important than the first. I like him.
He could have, he stole that from John Mulaney for sure.
What?
Cold-blooded from John Mulaney's special, Radio City Hall special.
It'd be funny if that was true.
I think that might be true.
It's possible.
And two.
He does steal a lot.
And two, he missed the perfect opportunity. The perfect opportunity to say, go ahead, take my dad. Please. Take my wife.
He was stealing from a Catskills comedian.
Come
perhaps.
On.
So we've heard a lot about Alex's dad possibly being involved in all these operations, but what about his mom? What does his mom have to say?
What does his mom do?
Well, I don't know. She works at InfoWars in some way, but
she kicked him off his knee. That's
we know
sure.
about that. But yeah. what does she have to say about all this shit about his dad being targeted?
That is a good
Her
question.
Her husband.
I really do think that's a good
what
question.
What does she think?
You know, my mom, in 25 years I've been on air, 24 and a half, has gotten mad at some of the things I've said or done. But when she learned they're trying to indict my dad for made-up stuff, man, she just said, we're good people. We love God. And you just get out there and you kick their ass and be strong.
Yeah, son. Go out there. Kick those globalists' ass.
Who is his mom?
His dad.
Clint Eastwood?
They're just imagined figures yeah. in his head. They're yeah, no, yeah, this yeah. isn't happening.
Yeah. That's fun.
Anyway, so
oh God. This dude's crazy, man.
At this point in the show, there's been enough time that has elapsed from Roger Stone's press conference that got the, I know that in our show it's been a couple hours since we talked about that, but I'm still tickled by the booing.
Boo!
I can't
cut his dick off.
I will watch that. Like in the same before we started the show, I forced
we watched
you.
The, yeah, yeah,
I forced
yeah.
you to watch Orson Welles drunkenly doing
I
a champagne commercial.
Happily did it.
Yes, and that brings me so much joy. I love that commercial so much. And adding like in that pantheon will be that Roger Stone getting booed and seeing his face, because his face is so like uh oh. You just see that fear in his face of like this isn't gonna go well. Nope.
God, I wish I was one of those people.
I can't bail immediately.
That's like somebody who's like, I was at the first Radiohead show. Like, that is that level
that's what
of
I'm talking
like,
about with Woodstock.
I wish I was there. Yeah. I wish yeah. I was there.
See it live. See that fear happen live. God damn.
Oh, I mean, beautiful.
Get, like, you've been to like a stand-up show and you've seen someone like 2 minutes into their set be like, I want to not do this, but you have to do 15
yep.
or whatever. Like
yeah,
you
yeah.
have to
you do your time.
Yeah, you have
you
to do
your fucking
time. And you see that in Roger's face, and it's fucking awesome. But that happened earlier, and now there's enough time has passed,
mm-hmm.
and the White House has given their response. Sarah Huckabee Sanders has come out and said, "This doesn't have anything to do with Trump."
Ugh.
Whatever.
What a fucking lying asshole.
She goes on CNN and does her deflection. Does like. Whatever Roger said, you know, like, yeah, sure, he talked to Trump, but he's been someone who's been an advisor for so many people. And this has nothing to do with Trump. No big deal. Whatever.
God, I wish she just breaks with the narrative and just goes, dude, I'm going to be honest. If Trump weren't the president, the FBI would be showing up at his house at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
This dude is fucking guilty.
Yeah.
Holy shit, this guy's guilty. I know I'm getting paid a lot of money.
For her to have like a, you want her to have like a network moment.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
That,
for sure.
Yeah, screaming in the streets, mad as hell. Trump, we can't take it anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's never going to happen. She's
no.
a bought and sold shill.
No,
and she's great at it. But
dead
like,
on the inside. Yeah, yeah. yeah.
She's very talented. I mean, not in as much as like she does a great job, because if she did a great job, she'd be better at deflecting.
Yeah.
But she doesn't crack.
No, never.
And that is her job.
Never.
That is the job.
It really makes me sad for her. And like, that.
Well, I mean, that's why Spicer got fucking fired.
No, that, yeah, exactly. Spicer cracked.
Yeah.
But that makes me sad for her, because I just imagine the childhood that Huckabee gave her.
Ooh.
That turned her into that, you know? Like, can you imagine growing up with Mike Huckabee as your dad?
Seems
yes,
like
you can, because you turn into a psychopath that stumps for
it's
fucking
bullshit.
It's
honestly weird, because like, Mike Huckabee's politics are terrible, but his brand does seem to be like he's a good guy.
Yeah.
You know, like,
that's what he pretends to be. Yeah.
Maybe he's not.
Like, he plays the bass and shit
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. He seems folksy and kind of
yeah.
nice. And
yeah,
you know, like,
yeah.
maybe he's not.
And you look at his daughter and you're like, oh, you fucked her up hard.
The proof of the pudding is in the eating,
ah,
as they say.
Ah.
And, so, the reason I bring this up is that Sarah Huckabee Sanders has come out and said, like, fuck this noise. That's not on us. Done that,
right.
basically. Like,
right.
fucking Roger's on his own.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing to say.
Right.
As opposed to,
we're going to pardon him so he doesn't squeal.
Or like, oh yeah, we're in on this or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Of course that's the response they make. And it leads Alex to be super fucking pissed off about how the Trump administration isn't rallying to Roger's aid.
Surprise.
And you know what it turns out? They're just jealous.
They know that InfoWars and Stone and all of us, the listeners, got him elected, and they're all hacks that just attach. We don't want to go attach ourselves to D.C. Stone didn't ask for a job in D.C. Exactly. So
yes,
they see us as competition.
Yes,
instead,
he did.
They ought to be listening
yes,
to us. And I know the president and a few others do listen. But you're right. They're very angry that we're the real brain trust and they're not. Exactly, dumbasses. We didn't come from where you are. We built our own thing. We called the country, jackasses.
It's testify, my brother.
Testify, my brother.
Testify.
Also, I don't know if you heard that, but there's a leaf blower going on in
the
background.
Yeah.
It becomes a real serious issue on the show.
Yeah.
I liked this. I wish I would have pulled this clip. Because they start making jokes about how the globalists are blowing their leaves. But they're not serious.
No.
They're not serious. And that kind of indicates that all of this is a joke. Yeah. All of the blaming things on the globalists.
Yeah.
It's almost like they're doing a parody of themselves. It's very weird, but that's still Roger's lawyer, Tyler, who's saying that.
Right.
Testify, my brother.
Get me a Nixon.
Yeah. So I promise you that in a couple of clips, this will deteriorate back to the God fake crying part.
For sure.
But still, this is a deterioration. Like they're just all just fucking jealous of us. They're in D.C. and we just love the people. They are so fucking pissed off that we're the real power and that's why they don't respect Stone. And then Stone's lawyer's like, yeah, fuck yeah, buddy. Thumbs up.
He's a bad lawyer.
It's bad optics.
God, he should go to jail.
I think he might. I mean, based on what I know from his testimony, like he did get questioned by Mueller and from everything I can tell from public statements, from that indictment, from things that Credico has said, like, I mean, whatever he said does contradict what seems to be the truth.
Yeah.
So it's not just because Credico says this.
Right.
It's because
it's documented.
Yeah.
It's because Roger documented it.
And Corsi.
Yeah.
God,
his only out is Mueller being like, you're just a shitty lawyer. You're just bad at your job.
Well, I mean, I think
you should be disbarred. But
in situations like this, I think that a lot of like lower rung people probably are going to get a pass. I think he might be able to, in terms of like, this is inconsequential.
Yeah.
Maybe a tiny piece of information that was gleaned from your questioning has helped us figure out X, Y, or
Z. Right.
But like, yeah, I don't think anybody gives a fuck if Tyler Nixon goes to prison.
I do. I kind of want him to go to prison.
I wouldn't mind.
Yeah.
But
it wouldn't be a bad day.
I'm not going to put my flag on that hill, though.
Cut his dick off!
Boo! So Alex is still sort of reeling, and earlier we heard him talk about his $40 million amount of money coming in.
Yeah, he is putting his business out.
Yeah, and in this next clip, a little bit later in the show, he talks about it some more, and he is fucking weird.
We're organic, bringing in $45 million a year now. That was 5 years ago, 20-something million. We started bringing in $45 million. Now I've got $20 million to work with. After all the bandwidth taxes, I mean, today it'll be hundreds of thousands of dollars in bandwidth. We're so gigantic right now. The average person doesn't buy anything. Fine. So then I end up with a few million, pay it to lawyers, have nothing. And I'm like, well, I could sell my house and fund the place another 3 months.
Bad business model.
You see where we're getting into here. I can't get in that position. I don't give a rat's ass. I mean, even about my own body. When it comes to war, I just need the fuel. So we're down to this, folks.
And that's
we're down to the wire. Bringing in $45 million this year, the way they've shut us down, we're lucky it was $30 million this year. And I'll have to lay people off and start shutting down.
Jesus.
So, because again, $30 million gross, half of it's product cost, so it's $15 million. I've got $10 million or whatever it is in bandwidth cost. You're like, oh, just do it yourself. I'm doing it myself. I'm fighting as hard as I can, but I need you to commit and go, damn it. I'm going to go to InfoWarsStore.com, and I'm going to buy the best the products, the best fish oil, the best brain boost, the best turbo force. I'm going to go there, and I'm going to do it. It's a war. Help, please.
Then it jumps to commercial. That's the hard out when he yells help.
Yeah.
That's a dark glimpse. Dark thing.
I want you guys to go to the InfoWars website. I want you to go to the store, and I want you to buy the single product that I advocated you not buying.
The Turbo Force.
I took half of a packet, and I got fucked up.
When I was watching the live stream of it, like, I recorded it, but I didn't use it for, like, cutting the clips of this episode. But, like, on the GCN streams, it's they have different commercials than on the live, like, Alex's own thing. Because it's just all Alex's commercials.
Well, Diamond Gusset loves
Spoiler alert. When the Stone Cold Truth was a show, Diamond Gusset was a sponsor on that,
Hell
too.
Hell yeah.
Through GCN.
Hell yeah.
But when Alex, like, just does his own commercials, he has one where he's just, like, doing a real fucking weird Turbo Force commercial. Where he's like, listen, when you... If you take this the first time, take a quarter of it, because it's fucking weird.
Right.
You're going to be fucked up. And then it ends with him.
It's like somebody selling you an edible where they're like, hey, you want to start out with a half of this.
Work your way in.
You're going to be like, this is an hour and this
is half you're cool. I know you're cool.
I'll eat the other half.
Don't do it.
Give it an hour or two.
Your gut tells you to do it. Don't do it. Turbo Force is real cool.
This cookie will fuck you up.
And then the commercial ends with Alex literally screaming, beware the power of Turbo Force. It's like, oh boy.
That is kind of that's not a terrible sales pitch for person who would get Turbo Force.
The person who's still there. Yeah.
Well, not just that, but the person who's like, oh shit. Are you telling me this is dangerous? Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
You might as well just say, do meth.
I'm too cowardly to find a dealer, but I want something scary.
I want meth.
There, Alex does another commercial too that I wish I had cut one of, but like, he's doing a commercial for the idea of posting hashtag Alex Jones. It's like a 30-second spot where it's just like, hashtag Alex Jones. If we do this, we will win. You're doing a commercial for a fucking hashtag.
That's like a podcast that's famous where they're like, well, we don't have a sponsor for this little bit right now, but it would be nice if you continued listening to this show. Anyways,
on another
back
level,
to the show.
It's incredibly sad that Alex constantly talks about how fuck these social media platforms. I don't care that I'm off them. And then does a commercial of, please use those to
put me on those social media platforms because they won't let me.
Yeah. So we get back to this, and Alex says something about how much of a pussy Donald Trump is and how his whole administration is full of dumb cucks, and also he needs money.
By the way, Jacob, you know, if they don't support Roger or me or others, then I don't even really care at the end of the day. You know what? Fine, folks. If you don't see what we've done, where we're at, I thank the listeners. This is so cut and dry. I can't imagine that America isn't more pissed. Like Sarah Huckabee Sanders is like, glad there's no Russian collusion, says it has nothing to do with the White House. Oh, great. Cut him loose when Trump called him a hero a few months ago. It's like, that is like blood in the water. But again, they're a bunch of damn cowards. We need wartime presidents. We're fighting for our country. We need people committed to this damn country.
Hell yes, Alex. Let's get angry. Let's get wild.
Who the fuck is that?
Something now, dork. What the F are we going to have?
They're getting the false flags ready. They're going to make their move. They got their terror teams ready. All I know is I've committed my will to this. Everybody has been maneuvered. And to whoever gets banned, oh, don't defend them. You'll get banned. They've already taught you how to be cowards. You've already failed lesson one. Now you'll fail forever if you don't wake up.
That guy was the guy who published Roger Stone's book. So it's kind of just a parade of Roger Stone associates on the show. Who cares? His interview is terrible.
I don't know
matter.
If I've ever heard you. That's so funny. Just dork. God damn it.
Well, I mean,
I'm sorry,
to
I
voice.
Lost my shit.
That
I,
voice,
no,
it's a
I
fucking
know,
dork.
I know, it's a dork. Yeah. It's a dork. But you didn't.
Guys on Nerd Patrol over here.
You always have the name, and you're like, this is the guy who published Roger.
I know what he is. I don't give a fuck what his name is. Yeah, no.
Dork.
Yeah. there's a certain amount of research that I can do. And, like, in a given amount of time.
Right.
And then what I have to do is kind of prioritize. Like, what's important? These bigger issues. What's not important is what else this fucking nerd has published. I don't give a shit. His interview with Alex is boring. It's just the same things Alex has been saying the whole time.
Yeah.
Who gives a shit? I'm sure he's published some fucking stupid books, and we could talk about that for another 20 fucking minutes. But instead, we got to talk about how Alex is getting weird. Now,
Is he Pete Holmes?
He makes it weird. We have one clip, and then it's off the cliff. It's off the fucking cliff into esoteric, weird nonsense.
Hell yeah.
Where Alex is, spoiler alert, going to essentially say that he is the voice of God.
There's a tree. It's in the river of life.
It's not.
It's
nope.
Trees,
no.
But the tree is life.
Nope. That's more fun because that's vague.
Yeah.
Alex is being a little too specific towards the end of this. But before he does, he's got to talk a little bit more about what we learned on Christmas Eve 2018 about how Alex told Roger to get in touch with Assange.
Yeah.
Alex starts talking about it again, and I think that's what kicks him into like full-on freak out.
Stone New Credit Co. and a bunch of others. He works the media. He was trying to get a hold. I remember saying, Roger, get Assange, or you interview him. It would be bigger. Find out what's in it. Well, I hear it's really big. I hear all this. I was there. He was asking for a job, and I said, you get me Julian Assange exclusive. You've got your job. And back then, he was a Fox News contributor, paid $50,000 a year. He didn't want to make a big deal out of that. They've got hundreds of people on the payroll as a contributor. As soon as he worked for us, he lost his job at Fox. But I was hiring
was
a Fox News
why?
Contributor. You know, of course he used to work and write for Lou Dobbs at CNN. So I'm getting the big wig anti-globalist guys hired. They turn that into this criminal thing we're involved in, and it's just like plastic banana, fake baloney, BS world. But what I'm getting at is we don't take it serious because we know it's not true, but then it happens, and 29 SWAT team people attack the house to make it look like it's legitimate, and now Roger's confident now, but my God, next week he gets arraigned like Manafort a year and a half ago, walk into that federal courthouse and never coming out again, man, except in a damn wheelchair. So, you know, we're talking here, folks, about real persecution. And if this is a test, like a parrot test of perch, you know, put its beak on it, see if it can stand on its weight. If America fails this test, if Trump and Sarah Huckabee Sanders fails this test, if they fail this test, we're done. So I'm a big Trump booster, help get him in. I think he's a great guy. But right now, I'm 2x4 upside the head saying, listen, get in gear, honcho.
So that seems like, I don't know. I'm tired of Alex's like lines in the sand about Trump. You know, I can't get it up for him being like,
shove
hey,
ISIS,
Trump, do
shove
this.
ISIS up your dirty asshole. Yeah. And then tomorrow you're like, you gotta get another chance.
This seems more real than the others, if only because like it affects his bottom line.
Yeah.
But I still don't give a fuck. But like the way he's talking about this, it makes it seem like he 100% like believes Roger's version of the timeline.
Yeah.
And that's not true. Like Roger's version of the timeline isn't true, as
no,
we discussed
I think, yeah,
at the beginning of the show.
You've absolutely proven that.
As has Mueller. You
exactly.
Know, like, only going off of the documents that they have released.
No, I'm not saying that you researched.
Listen, I have a special
you
investigation.
Solved it. Yeah. No, you directed yourself 2 years ago to learn more about the,
So, I've been sort of teasing you a little bit, and that's not intentional, because Alex freaked out a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
And he does freak out really hard. But I kind of forgot as we were going through it that there are a couple of like just sort of substantive clips in the middle.
There are some peaks and valleys.
Yeah. He came back to reality to talk about like how I gave Roger this job and I told him to get Assange as a condition of getting this job.
Right.
I hired him, which implies that he did get in touch with Assange.
Right.
But Alex is now saying he didn't get in touch with it.
Right.
Who knows? Who cares? All that stuff that's the grounding aspect of this.
Right.
But then in this next clip, Jordan.
He goes up, there goes gravity.
No. Mom's spaghetti comes up. Because Alex accidentally starts talking about why he does his show.
Uh-huh.
Why does Alex Jones do his show? He admits why.
Money!
And so the one crime I have, the one skill I have.
Why'd you say crime?
Is I got a hell of a lot of life force. And I
Turbo
got a hell
force.
Of a lot of will. And I'm ready to die. In fact, I'm not just ready to die. Giving into these globalists is unlimited death. I can feel hell on the other side. In fact, I do this out of fear. There's no way to join them and get out of this. The only thing you can do is resist it. And those of you that have any discernment left will have chills up and down your spine. You need to go with God right now. You need to understand you can't beat this by yourselves. You need to ask for Jesus Christ right now. And you need to reach towards God, everything you got. Now, there are those of us that have to stand in the gap to try to get time for people to wake up, and I'm willing to do it. But let me tell you, it isn't fun with this breathing down my neck. So I'm going to tell you right now, folks, you better decide which side you're on. You better do it forever.
I've decided. I'm against you, Alex.
Yeah.
I don't care to side with your imagined enemies, but I'm against you.
I think he's trying to pull himself off as, like, what if Obi-Wan Kenobi was Alex Jones? Like, that's the only corollary I can think of.
What if Obi was racist?
Yeah, exactly. What if Obi-Wan Kenobi, instead of being a wise Jedi Master who helped fuck up the Empire or whatever, what if he instead was a fucking lunatic like a Yosemite Sam in the desert?
What if he was a controlled opposition agent trying to lure Skywalker
That sounds right!
Into a false flag attack?
No!
The Death Star was a false flag.
Last Jedi was a great movie. Fuck everybody who disagrees.
That clip is pretty insane. And one of the reasons that I think that last clip was really deeply fucked up is that, like, Alex is admitting that I operate off of fear.
Mm-hmm.
I only do this because I'm scared. And I know that a lot of that is performative, but I think there's a kernel of truth in there. Like,
yeah.
I think that there is a fear that drives him. And one of the problems that I have with that is that his fear is based on an imagined enemy.
Right.
You know, this idea of these globalists and all this stuff. Like, when you really break it down and you start to parse what he's talking about, you look at the documents that he references and you realize, like, those don't say what he's saying. You look at, like, the things that are formative to him, things like mm-hmm. The Naked Capitalist by Skousen. None dare call it conspiracy.
Right.
Then you realize, like, oh, this is just crock of shit, like, communist conspiracy theory bullshit from decades past. It's all just warmed over protocols of the Elders of Zion, right, kind of ideas worked into a new framework.
And right. The Russians know how to propagandize in a way that has resonated through the past 110 years.
Right. And not like the modern Russian state even can't be blamed for that.
No, it's absolutely
deep in the
not.
Past.
Yeah.
But like you start to recognize that and you start to think about it. It's like, that's where Alex got the conception of these imagined enemies that he's so afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to look at it a little bit, and I might be reaching a little bit too much, and I know I try to practice radical empathy with Alex because I think it's the only way to approach him. You know, deal with exactly the things he's saying on a literal basis.
Right.
You deal with insanity by bringing acceptance of that insanity and then analysis of that insanity.
Yeah.
If you respond with anger and like, look at this fucking asshole, and get mad, you're never going to get anywhere. You dismiss it, you're also never going to get anywhere. So when I hear stuff like this, I recognize what he's saying, and I try to hear what he's saying, and I hear that. I hear there are these demonic, weird enemies that I have that are based on this misunderstanding of history that was based on all these books.
Yeah.
And when I sit with it a little bit longer and I hear a clip like that where Alex says, I am motivated by fear.
Yeah.
It's hard for me not to think about the idea that he encountered these ideas as a child and he got fucking terrified about them.
Yeah.
Like, I don't mean to let him off the hook at all. Again, like, as much as that, like, sleep apnea, brain damage stuff, like, I'm not letting him off the hook for his ideas. Just possibly his behavior mm-hmm. is explained by that.
Yeah.
In the same way, you look at this and you think, like, the brain of a child could be very traumatized by the idea of this demonic world force that's against you. And they have tendrils everywhere.
Right.
The idea of a 12-year-old mind taking in this, none dare call it conspiracy, where it's like, every single powerful entity is working against you, and they want to commit genocide and all that stuff.
Right.
There's a really decent chance that that book fucked his mind up, and he's been living in like a PTSD kind of state since. He operates off fear because of that child brain.
Right. No, the thing that I have occasionally gone back and forth on is, are we a true crime podcast? Do you know what I mean? Like, to a certain extent, we are watching a serial killer, and we are tracing...
He just technically probably killed one guy.
He's, okay. Individual killer. Like, in a certain sense, we are tracing this man who you cannot have empathy for back to a place where you could have had empathy for him.
Yeah.
And so with something like that, I feel like that is a layer cake of like, the first layer is, if you take him literally, he is afraid.
Yeah.
The second layer is, this is a performance, he's not actually afraid. But the bottom layer is, he was or is actually afraid, and he is hiding this reality like a Chi-Com nesting doll.
Yeah, I mean, because,
you know?
Because what you have to wrestle with is the idea that what he's afraid of isn't real.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not.
Yeah.
And so then the question becomes, after that, where did he get those ideas? And right. As you start, like, going down that road, the further and further you get down that road, the more you realize, like, this has just been it's basically what we're doing is Serial, but with too many episodes. And
that was like a 10-part series.
And no end point. Like, we have no preparation, and WBEZ is not involved.
And
not
neither
interested.
Is MailKeimp.
Yeah, MailKeimp doesn't care. So I think that's really fucked up.
Yeah.
And I think it tells a lot. I think it speaks volumes. But in this next clip, this is where Alex starts to get like a dangerous level of grandiose. This next two clips, I think, are so fucked up.
If you love God and you love justice and you hear what I'm saying, it means you resonate with God.
That is deeply fucked up.
I believe it was Jesus who said Alex Jones would be the rock of the church. I believe that Alex Jones is the lodestone who holds up the church. That sounds right.
I mean, like, on a very basic level, what he's saying is that, like, I speak for God.
Yeah.
And if what I'm saying resonates with you, then you resonate with God.
Yep.
That's
pulpy.
This isn't a political show, man. This is like that. If it wasn't on the radio and just being said in a small room, that's cult shit.
Yeah, yeah.
That is cult shit to a T.
If Anderson Cooper goes on TV and says, if you understand what I'm saying, you understand what God is saying to you.
Holy shit.
The entire world would fucking explode.
Yeah. Rightfully so.
Yeah, it would be insane. It would be insane.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, this is the type of shit he could get away with when he was on social media.
Yeah, totally. This
you know?
Yeah, this isn't something that's going to get... This is just like, hey, you're weird. You're fucked up.
Yeah.
I mean, he's implying that he speaks for God.
Well, he does.
Sure.
Weird God.
In this next clip, he kind of implies that InfoWars is an outpost for God.
And you decided which side you're on. That's why this is all here. There's not just evil in the world. God made sure that there'd be platforms
Helter-skelter.
Until the last minute of the last hour.
Helter-skelter.
Always saying, we're here for you.
Helter-skelter.
We love you. We're inclusive. Life is inclusive. Don't go with Satan.
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
That is insanity.
That is fucking crazy.
That is literally... Like,
what?
The part about, like, God is going to provide platforms and we're one of them. Like, that sort of idea, that's crazy.
The other one is Facebook, of course.
But the other, like, more grounded part of it is that Alex thinks he's inclusive. That part is even crazier. Because you can toss aside the, like... God and delusions of weird mania. That sort of stuff is like, you could put that in a box. The idea that he thinks he's inclusive is so inexcusable.
Okay. There is, just from a literal definition standpoint, inclusion does not necessarily, preclude exclusion.
Sure.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Limited inclusion.
Yeah. You can still be inclusive, but if your inclusion is only white people, I mean, technically you are inclusive.
I should say, before that clip, he did say, you can be brown, black. No, you can be like, black,
sorry.
White, Asian, Jew, whatever.
Yeah.
He did it. He did his, like, we all bleed red
blood. As long as you are a white supremacist, it doesn't matter what skin color you have. Or where you're from, what you practice.
He was trying, you know, he did his lead up to that, that comment there with the, like, you could be white, black, brown, Asian, Hispanic, whatever. Like, that sort of standard boilerplate, but I really don't think it's important. Like, the fact that he said that, and which is why I didn't include it in the clip.
Yeah. Well, now you're exclusive.
No. I don't care how he prefaces that.
I know.
His imagined idea of inclusivity is so exclusive. It's It's
the
nonsense.
Only good Islam that isn't radical is Christianity.
So Alex is getting into this really weird headspace where he's like, I speak for God. If you listen to what I'm saying and get a boner,
yeah,
then you resonate with God. And that's great. Mm-hmm. And then also, God has made it so there will be places where you can come until the last days. And that's me. That's us. That's what we're doing here. We are an outpost sanctioned by God,
right,
which is really, really deeply fucked up. And we have one more clip. I want to be clear, this last clip really demonstrates entirely what Alex's entire operation is about. And when we enjoy these sort of like weird esoteric dalliances that he has,
yeah,
it's important to realize why they're there. And then also realize that Alex is, you know, I mean, there's indications he's struggling too. But he's struggling with, like, ghosts, imaginary.
I mean, and the things that he's struggling with that are real are things that he's created himself.
Yeah. His own, like, roadblocks he's built.
Yeah.
But, like, listen to how this clip, I think, is a full demonstration of, like, where that, like, fun, interesting, esoteric nonsense pivots back into the real world. And it's the same thing when he's faking crying and it turns into rage.
Yeah.
It's always something that he's marginally in control of.
Okay.
You don't think I don't know the enemy's own operations, all their maps, all their plans? It's a weakness of mine that I won't project into it and actually look into what they do. But I do it. I do it when I have to, and it's not fun. And I'm not complaining. Here's the thing. I'm actually weak. I really should look into the enemy's mind more. And I've promised I would. I've not had the will to do it lately, but I'm going to try. Maybe tonight. It's really horrible, though. You see what they're doing to kids and everybody. It's
Dershowitz.
It's not fun. I'll just Trump. Leave it at that. But I'll do what has to be done. All I'm telling you is we need your prayers. We need your support now.
We need your money!
Not tomorrow, not next week, not next year. This is it. This is the big push for the decision on a planetary level, whether we are destroyed as a planet or whether we go to the next level. Our spirits, God's already going to divide those up from the good from the bad. But this is an intergalactic quest. It's a great moment to be alive, and I'm just very blessed and very humbled to be here talking to you. And I just encourage you again, the power you have when you get excited and you get focused is unlimited. When you understand the potential you have and when you financially support us.
Boo. Boo.
Boo.
You see, he's in control of that.
Yep.
He's saying a bunch of shit, a bunch of nonsense. And it's fun on some level. Like this, like he's getting esoteric and talking about like it's a galactic quest we're on.
Yeah.
The destruction of our very planet hinges on Roger Stone's indictment.
Somehow Tim Allen is involved.
But like that nonsense is all within his control because he's easily able to weave it towards like,
yeah,
you have to financially support us. He has an ad pivot out of one of the deeper esoteric nonsense kind of idea. Like, I'm going to look into the enemy's mind. I try to, but it's too painful.
Yeah.
It's too painful. Maybe tonight. And he's still doing the exact same voice he's doing in that weird esoteric breakdown when he gets into like, you have to give us support financially. Now. The battle is now.
Yeah.
And so, I know, I break myself away from any kind of ethical, like, ideas about, like, I don't know, just in any way feeling sorry for him. Because when you see stuff like that, you don't know, there's nothing that is not intentional about how he's using his fucked upness.
Yeah.
I don't think that there's anything wrong about you and I taking time out of our day to wrestle with the possibility that we're wrong in mocking him.
I was thinking the whole time that clip was going on, I was getting back to this, like, we've done this so many times where you listen to him and this is his talent.
Mm-hmm.
His talent is truly, even while we have spent 2 years dissecting all the dumb fuck shit that he has said and proving that this is intentional, while I was listening to that clip, I was kind of halfway in this place of like, what do you really believe? Is this all? What is you?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's
what
like,
is you?
And then it's like, hey, we need your financial support. And you're like, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yep. While he's trying to defend Roger, obviously he doesn't want any more questions to be asked about himself or his dad.
Of course not.
But he's mostly primarily concerned with the idea that I have the exclusive and no one's talking about it.
Yep.
We have so many people coming to the website and 1% of you buy our product. It's kind of pissing me off.
Yep.
And then as the show goes on, he loses a ton of the fucking audience because they're like, he's not really even talking about any Roger stuff. This isn't really that interesting.
Yep.
And he gets into an existential crisis, starts talking about God, gets into this weird fucking place where he says that he speaks for God and InfoWars is an outpost for God and he's going to get into the enemy's mind, but it's so painful. But it's really just a way to continue what he's been doing the whole show, which is try and get people to give him more money because he's making less money than before.
Yep.
So fuck all of this. I'm going to say at the end of this, my summation is I think that, first of all, I made my point clear earlier. Roger Stone is fucked. That indictment is pretty open and shut.
Goddamn well should be.
We will be back in the future talking about the Corsi stuff as more information is available.
Yeah.
Right now, I don't think there's enough for us to have a solid position on it. Although, if I were a gambling man, which I am, give me my wallet. Where is it? Over there. I would bet.
You should really know where you are.
I would bet that Corsi is probably cooperating in a substantial way, and there might be a lot of information that comes out from that.
Yeah. Cause
I also think the coward, he's a coward. I think he is a,
Corsi is for sure.
He strikes me as someone who, is probably over trusted in that world and also very malleable.
No, I would say it took forever to break Manafort. And when the FBI called Corsi, he was like, you're the FBI? I will tell you literally everything right now over the phone. I don't even,
Manafort.
I don't even want you to bring me in.
Manafort, since the early 80s, literally has worked for dictators, like murderers. He has lobbied for and gotten paychecks for blood. He knows that and has done that. Same with Roger. They have known that their business is built on the deaths of people in other countries. And they've made peace with that.
Not just the deaths, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of and thousands
tortures.
Of tortures. And yes.
Torture.
Like, absolutely.
Brutality. Like the things that even just the in Zaire and in the Philippines.
Yeah.
Even just those, like the you get into like the specifics of what those people were doing that were contracted by their firm. Like, it's unspeakable stuff. Like, Ferdinand Marcos, like, he legitimately had a policy in place where what he would like to do is he would take people and then he would disfigure them. Like, political dissidents?
Yeah.
He would disfigure them and kill them and then leave their bodies in the open for people to find in order for them to find it and be terrified about this is what happens.
Right.
Roger Stone and his firm still were fine taking their money. So the point that I'm making here with this sort of like real distillation of the brutality of people Roger Stone is comfortable working with and Manafort is that those dudes have ice water in their fucking veins. They don't give a shit.
Yep.
Like they will protect their ass as best they can. But when it comes down to it, if they're in a courtroom or Mueller is talking to them, they have faced down people who have murdered thousands of people. So they have some experience with that high pressure situation.
Yeah.
Corsi has written for WorldNet Daily. Corsi wrote a bullshit book about Obama not being a citizen.
Yeah.
Like he poses like someone who's like, I have all these contacts with the people in intelligence and whatever. He's not made of the strong stuff. And I'm not saying that is a positive thing that Manafort and Stone are. They have been deeply mixed up with people who are much more dangerous than even the United States judicial system.
Right. Do you, when we did the Joe Arpaio episode, I had to stop because you went through line by line an insane number of torturous, murderous fucking bullshit.
And negligence. And, intentional negligence.
Intentional. Arpaio is a true monster. Absolutely. Roger Stone and Paul Manafort have been the Himmlers for many dictators. Yep. Like, even Himmler was just a fucking propagandist for only one dictator.
Right.
When they go to hell, which doesn't exist, and that's why I hope they get lit
it's
on
a bummer.
Fire.
It's a bummer hell
but
doesn't
I,
exist.
I know.
Because of them.
Because of them. Yep. Because they are worse than Nazis.
Yep. And the big problem that I have is that, like, Roger Stone plays into his image as, like, I'm a fucking dirty trickster or whatever to, yeah. like, and I think that it's so important to draw a line between, like, what is the fun image of him and the reality?
Yeah.
Because it's different. It's different. Like, he's like, ah, look at this. I, like, back when he worked for fucking Nixon's reelection campaign, he's like sending invitations to Democrats to a fake dinner.
Yeah.
To
yeah,
like
yeah.
be like, aha, prank. You know, like that sort of stuff. Like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
You were also involved in Watergate shit. That yeah. stuff did come out.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
oh, that's, but it's still like, that was when you're like 20. There's tricksterish elements to it. It's cantankerous.
Yeah.
That's not who he is since then. And it's not been who he has been since at least the fucking 80s. I mean, there's a ton of people who are involved with InfoWars that we could do an episode that would be like scathing.
Yeah.
And damning.
Yeah.
And just because it's not the most pressing thing ever, it would take a ton of work and it would be like, well, we just got to keep the process moving forward.
Right.
People like Paul Craig Roberts or like Wayne Madsen.
Yeah.
Like these people have deep histories of really fucked up things that they've done. And when they're relevant, we will do a whole episode about
yeah,
them.
Oh, hell yeah.
And Roger Stone just forced our hands by getting indicted.
Yeah.
But the important thing is that he is no joke. He is a fucking monster, and not in a fun way.
No. It's fun to treat him as if he's a monster in a fun way. It's
yeah.
more fun.
Well, it's how you get through it.
It's one of those things where and this is the hard part of just pure morality. If you want to go with a fucking point system, when you talk about the dictators that they fucking worked for,
sure.
they tortured and murdered hundreds of thousands of people. Who never, ever, and it shouldn't have happened. It should never have happened, no matter what. But somehow there are people who have truly done enough to actually deserve that treatment, and they will never, ever, ever get it. Like, I don't care. I don't care
no.
as far as, look, Roger Stone deserves the worst of what,
I hope he gets a very you know, comfortable accommodation in a federal prison where the state pays for him to survive for the rest of his life. So, so Jordan, we're at the end of
yes.
this episode. We are done. And I don't know. I think, I'm exhausted. I don't know how to sum anything of this up. Roger's screwed. We'll see what happens. The Corsi stuff will play out over the next bit. We'll see. I don't know.
It's,
I would like you to sum this up because
okay.
I'm burnt out.
Okay. I will do my best to sum this up as well as I can. Stone is fucked. Corsi is fucked. Everybody is fucked. Somehow, Alex is not fucked in the same way. And I think
he's financially
is both,
fucked.
Well, he's financially fucked, but he's not fucked in the way that he's going to go to prison. Like, and I think that is both something that he is jealous of.
Yeah.
As well as something that he is grateful for. And it's a weird place for him to be. So for him to do an episode like this, he is watching people become martyrs in their own minds in a real way. And it bums him out because he is a martyr in a fake way.
But it also bums him out that he's not getting the exclusive with Joan Fark.
It does.
So
it does.
Yeah. Because yep. that's really what it's more about is like his bottom line.
Yeah.
It's
well,
interesting that
true.
The day his best friend gets arrested, he's concerned that no one's giving him credit for, like, if you got arrested, I wouldn't come on the podcast and do an emergency episode where it's like, hey, Jordan's on the phone. Hey, Jordan, how's it going? And then do an interview with you and then for fucking 40 minutes be like, no one is recognizing that I talked to Jordan. Like, that's a weird impulse. That's
yeah.
a very weird, like,
but,
if,
but it's a perfectly logical impulse for their relationship as both of them being psychopaths.
Yep.
Because Roger was on the phone with them and then fucking bailed.
I don't give a fuck.
With no, like, goodbye or anything like that. I gotta go do a CNN.
Ghosted the fuck out of him.
It's just, to voicemail.
Yeah.
And Alex is on air and he's not saying, we should take care of Stone. He's saying, give me money.
Yeah.
He says, hey, donate to Roger Stone's legal defense fund once, twice.
And he says donate to
InfoWars or buy InfoWars products a million times.
And most of the times he's saying donate to Stone's fund. He's also then pivoting into like, we also need money.
Yeah.
So
100%.
It's two parasites sucking off each other to some extent. And it's an untenable, like unsustainable situation. I don't know. We'll see what happens. We have done this episode with the amount of information we have at our disposal now. There will be more information coming in the future that may color some of this stuff, but I think that for now we've done as best we can. We'll be back. But until then, we have a website. It's knowledgefight.com. It's also failyourhand.com. It's also alexjonesshow.us.
Love that one.
Love it. Thank you, Ian.
We are also on Twitter. What are we?
@knowledge_fight.
A lot of new followers
there. Thank you so much, everybody.
All right. Are we on Facebook?
Facebook, we are there. We have a group called Go Home, You Tell Your Mother You're Brilliant. A lot of new members there. Thank you guys so much.
Wonderful.
We're also on iTunes.
We are.
You can leave a review, subscribe.
Download it all. Subscribe.
Download them all.
It's too many. God, so many posts in the group have been like, I started listening from the beginning and now I'm losing my mind.
Yep.
Guys, this show is the turbo force of podcasts.
It's too late in the episode to say this, but I've made this point a number of times. Yeah. Be careful with even our show.
Yeah.
The rhetoric that Alex employs is so toxic that even with context and all that and humor, it's still, if you listen to too much of it, it will be painful.
Yeah.
But be that as it may, we'll be back. I will say,
indeed.
Here's what I would say.
Do you think Stone has killed a guy?
No, I don't know.
Oh man, I feel like he had to. He's strangled a dude, or at least somebody.
Manslaughter.
Yeah.
But his lawyer, Tyler Nixon, I assume probably hasn't killed anybody.
Possible.
That guy seems like he's just,
unless he took I think he may have taken the identity of the real Tyler Nixon.
Of the guy who, the Eisenhower grandson, who married into the Nixon family, possibly. But we can't prove it, but one guy who has technically probably killed a guy, that's Alex Jones.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.